हरे कृष्ण। सो इट्स ए कोइंसिडेंस दैट इन दिस मानसून एट जीवी वी आर डिस्कसिंग मानसून एट वृंदावन फ्रॉम द 10th कैंटो। सो वी आर ऑल्सो इन वृंदावन विथ वृंदावन बिहारी। सो आई थॉट इन दिस कंटेक्स्ट वेयर द सीनियर बैच डिवोटीज हैव रीच्ड दिस चैप्टर we can invite the junior batch also to experience monsoon in Vrindavan. So we will discuss. So this is like a regular class for the senior batch, but for the junior batch it is like a retreat. So the retreat style of presentation will tone it down little closer to regular class for the senior batch, for the junior batch. And for the senior batch, the regular class style will, you know, make it closer towards the retreat style. And somewhere in the middle, we will meet and discuss this chapter. So, last year also I presented the same thing. Most of the pictures that you see in this PowerPoint are GV pictures only. Monsoon in Gordhaniko village. Last year, Vrindavan did not manifest completely, right? Not so many details were there. Stone cladding, all this were not there. But we have clicked many photos from our 65 acres land only. Most of them are clicked by our Anupam Gaurang Prabhu. We thank him for the manifestation of this PPT. And yeah, we'll go verse by verse. So the agenda for today is, we'll make all of you into groups. Oh, how many are there total? Total 14 from your batch, right? 14 plus 33. It's about 45, something like that. So we can make batches of 6 batches, right? 6 teams. Each team can be how many? 8 people. 6, 8 or 48, yeah, something like that. So 8 people, one team we can make. So we have a big temple hall. We can make 6 clusters with 8 people each. And till lunch time, so I will discuss some of the analogies that Sukadeva Goswami gives about monsoon in Vrindavan. After that, we will end much before lunch time only. Lunch is what time? 12:30, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock is lunch. We'll end by 12 o'clock only. Rajbhog, conch shell blows, right? By the time I think we should end. Then 12 o'clock you all can take your umbrellas and your cameras or phones or whatever you have, gadgets. You go out, your team members. So you go into different forests of Vrindavan and then click photos of different phenomena of monsoon of Vrindavan and come up with your own analogies. So we did the similar way when we were having 24 Gurus episode, when this current senior batch was junior batch last year, when that senior batch was approaching 11th canto, so we had a retreat on 24 Gurus. So 24 Gurus, most of the Gurus are the natural elements only, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and some animals and birds and mammals, etc. So we told our devotees, we made them into teams and sent them in our 100 acres of land of GEV, and then identify your own gurus. So although it was 24 gurus, I couldn't complete the chapter. So I did only 6 gurus. I discussed only 6 gurus, and they came up with 60 gurus. So all of them had a very wonderful learning experience. I don't need this. No? So they identified, because daily we are studying and memorizing many things. So in the retreats, we get an opportunity to actually contemplate and reflect, right? So this is applied Bhagavatam. So we have to apply how various natural phenomena are occurring in Vrindavan, in our nature, and how Sukadeva Goswami here is contemplating and bringing out various lessons, and how acharyas like Chakravarti Pada and Prabhupada are bringing out more lessons, more insights from those natural phenomena. So all this we will see in this chapter. So that will give us an impetus and you know, inspiration to also reflect in our lives. right, and contemplate on what we are studying and try to apply it. And there is always some little risk factor in our own contemplation in the beginning days. It could be speculation also, right? So we should make sure that whatever we are reflecting, whatever we are, you know, trying to, you know, think and then derive some lesson or understand some natural phenomena, etc., that has to be in line with what our previous acharyas had taught us, right? So Radhishyam Prabhu says we have to read between lines in line with the parampara. So you can't just bring out a tangential you know, application point from what we have studied. So we can see, oh, is it in line with Guru Sadhu Shastra, my reflections? So that we need to have a check and balance. And when we have some question, Prabhu, I am thinking in this way, is it correct? So we can always check with some senior devotee about our understanding. So ultimately, we are there to, by studying our Shastra, we should develop Shastra Chakshu. We should be able to see things around us from the vision given by the Shastras. That is the purpose of this kind of retreats. And several chapters in Bhagavatam also reveal this kind of lesson to us. Right? So many analogies of Bhagavatam are related to nature only. Almost all chapters, we can say, all chapters have some analogies. And most of the analogies are related to nature. Okay, some lessons are derived from sun, right? Some phenomena, to explain a philosophical point, so the acharyas, or Sukadeva Goswami himself, compares it with some sun or moon or fish or something like that, and then gives a lesson. For example, Yadus were taking Krishna's association for granted. Then immediately Uddhava gives an example, as if moon and fish are equal. Both of them have taken birth from ocean only. But Yadus considered Krishna to be fish, another fish, right? We are equal only. So Krishna is like moon and all the Yadus may be like fish, right? That is one comparison. But sometimes fish foolishly might think that moon is also like us only. Right? Both are born from ocean only, but there is a lot of difference between both of them. Right? So when we give an analogy, when we explain a concept with some analogy, it becomes very clear. Right? So these chapters are filled with analogies, rainy season. So we'll begin. Text 1. 10th canto, chapter number 20, text 1. So senior batch people may have the books. So even junior batch people, even if you don't have books also, it's okay. All of you are given this printout, right? So three of you can share this printout. So three people can share one printout. You can be together. You can reflect with each other. Right? You can reflect in the association of others. So that they will, your team members only will confirm whether your reflections are bona fide or not. So 10.20. Shri Shuka Uvacha. तयोस्तद्भुतं कर्म दावाग्नेर मोक्षमात्मनः गोपास्त्रीभ्यः समाचक्युः प्रलम्बवधमेव च.
Goswami said to the ladies of Vrindavan, the coward boys, then related in full detail Krishna's and Balram's wonderful activities of delivering them from the forest fire and killing the demon Pralamba.
Thinking, when did Sukadeva Goswami speak to the ladies of Vrindavan? Sukadeva Goswami said to the ladies of Vrindavan, the cowherd boys then related in full detail. Sukadeva Goswami, the previous chapter of 10th canto discusses the episodes of Pralambasur and swallowing forest fire. So these are the last couple of chapters which Harigopal Prabhu have described to you very nicely. So whenever some demon killing episode happens, all the Gopa friends of Krishna would come to Vrindavan and explain that incident, narrate that incident to all these Vrajavasis. So whenever we hear Krishna Katha from devotees, that becomes even more relishable than the activity of Krishna itself. Nigama kalpataror galitam phalam sukamukha adamrita darvasam yutam. ಪಿಬತ ಭಾಗವತಂ ರಸಮಾಲಯಂ ಮುಹುರಹೋ ರಸಿಕ ಭುವಿ ಭಾವುಕ. ಸೊ ವೈ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಹ್ಯಾಸ್ ಬಿಕಮ್ ವೆರಿ ನೆಕ್ಟೇರಿಯನ್? ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಸುಖದೇವ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಸ್ಪೋಕನ್ ಇಟ್, ರೈಟ್? ಸುಖ ಮುಖಾತ್ ಅಮೃತ ದ್ರವ ಸಂಯುತಂ. ದ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ಟೈಮ್ಸ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಆಕ್ಟಿವಿಟೀಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ, ಕ್ವಾಲಿಟೀಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಆರ್ ದೆಮ್ಸೆಲ್ಸ್ ನೆಕ್ಟೇರಿಯನ್, ಬಟ್ ವೆನ್ ಸುಖದೇವ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಸ್ಪೀಕ್ಸ್ ಇಟ್, ದೇ ಬಿಕಮ್ ಇವನ್ ಮೋರ್ ನೆಕ್ಟೇರಿಯನ್, ರೈಟ್? ಸೊ ಮ್ಯಾಂಗೋ, ದಟ್ ಹೋಲ್ ಥಿಂಗ್ ಇಸ್ ಕಂಪೇರ್ಡ್ ಟು ಎನಾಲಜಿ, ಎನದರ್ ಎನಾಲಜಿ, ಮ್ಯಾಂಗೋ ಎನಾಲಜಿ. ಸೊ ಮ್ಯಾಂಗೋ, ಎ ರೈಪ್ ಮ್ಯಾಂಗೋ ಈಸ್ ನೆಕ್ಟೇರಿಯನ್ ಡೆಫಿನೆಟ್ಲಿ, ರೈಟ್? ಎಸ್ಪೆಷಲಿ ಇಫ್ ಯು ರಿಮೂವ್ ದ ಪೀಲ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ರಿಮೂವ್ ದ ಸೀಡ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ದ ಪಲ್ಪ್ ಓನ್ಲಿ ಇನ್ಸೈಡ್ ದ ಸೆಮಿ ಸಾಲಿಡ್ ಸಬ್ಸ್ಟೆನ್ಸ್, ದಟ್ಸ್ ಕ್ವೈಟ್ ರಿಲಿಷಬಲ್. ಸೊ ಮ್ಯಾಂಗೋ ಇಸ್ ವೆರಿ ರಿಲಿಷಬಲ್, ಎ ರೈಪ್ ಮ್ಯಾಂಗೋ ಇಸ್ ವೆರಿ ರಿಲಿಷಬಲ್. ಬಟ್ ವೆನ್ ದ ರೆಡ್ ಬೀಕ್ ಆಫ್ ಎ ಪ್ಯಾರಟ್ ಬೈಟ್ಸ್ ಇಟ್, ದ ಟೇಸ್ಟ್, ಇಟ್ಸ್ ಫ್ಲೇವರ್ ಗೆಟ್ಸ್ ಎನ್ಹ್ಯಾನ್ಸ್ಡ್, ಇಟ್ ಇಸ್ ಸೆಡ್ ಲೈಕ್ ದಟ್. ಸಿಮಿಲರ್ಲಿ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಇಸ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಎ ರೈಪೆನ್ ಫ್ರೂಟ್, ನಿಗಮ ಕಲ್ಪತರೋರ್ ಗಲಿತಂ ಫಲಂ, ಇಟ್ಸ್ ಎ ರೈಪೆನ್ ಫ್ರೂಟ್ ಆಫ್ ವೇದಿಕ್ ವಿಸ್ಡಮ್, ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದಟ್ ಬಿಕಮ್ಸ್ ಇವನ್ ಮೋರ್ ಟೇಸ್ಟಿ ವೆನ್ ಸುಖಮುಖಾದ ಅಮೃತ ದ್ರವ ಸಂಯುತಂ, ವೆನ್ ಸುಖಮದೇ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಸ್ಪೀಕ್ಸ್ ಇಟ್. ಸೊ ಹಿಯರ್ ಆಲ್ ದಿ ಗೋಪಾಸ್ ಆರ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕ್ರೈಬಿಂಗ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣಸ್ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ಟೈಮ್ಸ್. ಸೊ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪರ್ಫಾರ್ಮ್ಸ್ ಎ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ಟೈಮ್, ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಇಫ್ ಯು ವಿಟ್ನೆಸ್ ದಟ್ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ಟೈಮ್, ದಟ್ ಈಸ್ ಡೆಫಿನೆಟ್ಲಿ ವೆರಿ ರಿಲಿಷಬಲ್. ಬಟ್ ವೆನ್ ಗೋಪಾಸ್ ಕಮ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕ್ರೈಬ್ ದಟ್ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ಟೈಮ್, ಇಟ್ಸ್ ಇವನ್ ಮೋರ್ ರಿಲಿಷಬಲ್ ದ್ಯಾನ್ ವೆನ್ ಯು ಆರ್ ಡೈರೆಕ್ಟ್ಲಿ ವಿಟ್ನೆಸಿಂಗ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣಸ್ ಆಕ್ಟಿವಿಟಿ, ರೈಟ್? ಸೊ ದಟ್ ಈಸ್ ದ ಇಂಪಾರ್ಟೆಂಟ್ ಪಾಯಿಂಟ್ ಹಿಯರ್. ಆಲ್ ದಿ ವೃಂದಾವನ್ ಲೇಡೀಸ್, ಆಲ್ ದಿ ಎಲ್ಡರ್ಲಿ ಗೋಪೀಸ್, ರೈಟ್? ಸೊ ದೇ ನೆರೇಟ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣಸ್ ಸ್ಟೀಲಿಂಗ್ ಆಕ್ಟಿವಿಟೀಸ್ ಟು ಮದರ್ ಯಶೋದ. ಸೊ ವೆನ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಆಲ್ ದೀಸ್ ಗೋಪೀಸ್, ದೇ ಹ್ಯಾಡ್ ದೇ ರಿಲಿಷಡ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣಸ್ ಸ್ಟೀಲಿಂಗ್ ಆಕ್ಟಿವಿಟೀಸ್, ದ ಪರ್ಪಸ್ ಫಾರ್ ವಿಚ್ ದೇ ಚರ್ನ್ ಬಟರ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ಯುನೋ ಬಾಯಿಲ್ ಮಿಲ್ಕ್ ಆರ್ ವಾಟ್ ಎವರ್ ಈಸ್ ಓನ್ಲಿ ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ಕಮ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಸ್ಟೀಲ್ ದಮ್. ದಟ್ ಈಸ್ ದ ಓನ್ಲಿ ಪರ್ಪಸ್ ಆಫ್ ದೇರ್ ಚರ್ನಿಂಗ್, ಅದರ್ವೈಸ್ ದೇರ್ ಇಸ್ ನೋ ಅದರ್ ಪರ್ಪಸ್. ಸೊ ಅಪರೆಂಟ್ಲಿ ದೇ ಬಿಕಮ್ ಆ್ಯಂಗ್ರಿ ವಿತ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ದ ಚಾಸ್ಟೈಸ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ, ಯು ಆರ್ ಅ ಥೀಫ್ ಲೈಕ್ ದಟ್, ದೇ ಸ್ಕೋಲ್ಡ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ದಟ್ ಇಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಔಟ್ ಆಫ್ ದೇರ್ ಪ್ಯೂರ್ ಎಫೆಕ್ಷನ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಲವ್ ಓನ್ಲಿ. ಸೊ ಇಟ್ಸ್ ವೆರಿ ರಿಲಿಷಬಲ್ ಫಾರ್ ದೆಮ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಇಸ್ ಕಮಿಂಗ್ ಇನ್ ಸ್ಟೀಲಿಂಗ್, ಬಟ್ ದೇ ವಾಂಟ್ ಟು ಇನ್ಕ್ರೀಸ್ ದಟ್ ರಿಲಿಷ್ ಬೈ ಶೇರಿಂಗ್ ಇಟ್ ವಿತ್ ಯಶೋದಮಯಿ. ಸೊ ದೇ ಡೂ ದಟ್ ಇನ್ ದ ಫಾರ್ಮ್ ಆಫ್ ಕಂಪ್ಲೇಂಟ್ಸ್. ದೇ ಕಮ್ ಇನ್ ಫ್ರಂಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಯಶೋದಮಯಿ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ಸೇ ಡಿಫ್ರೆಂಟ್ ಕಂಪ್ಲೇಂಟ್ಸ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ, ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದಟ್ ಬಿಕಮ್ಸ್ ಇವನ್ ಮೋರ್ ರಿಲಿಷಬಲ್. ಸೊ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಸ್ಟೀಲಿಂಗ್ ಆಕ್ಟಿವಿಟೀಸ್ ಬಿಕಮ್ ಮೋರ್ ರಿಲಿಷಬಲ್ ವೆನ್ ಗೋಪೀಸ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕ್ರೈಬ್ ದೆಮ್ ದ್ಯಾನ್ ವೆನ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಇಸ್ ಆ್ಯಕ್ಚುಲಿ ಪರ್ಫಾರ್ಮಿಂಗ್ ದಮ್ ಲೈಕ್ ದಟ್. ಸೊ ಸಿಮಿಲರ್ಲಿ ವೆನ್ ಗೋಪಾಸ್ ಆರ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕ್ರೈಬಿಂಗ್ ಆಲ್ ದ ಡಿಮನ್ ಕಿಲ್ಲಿಂಗ್ ಆಕ್ಟಿವಿಟೀಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ, ದೇ ಬಿಕಮ್ ಮೋರ್ ಎಕ್ಸೈಟಿಂಗ್. ಸಮನ್ ಹೂ ಹಿಯರ್ಸ್ ಇಟ್ ಬಿಕಮ್ಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಎಕ್ಸ್ಟಾಟಿಕ್, ರೈಟ್? ಬಿಕಮ್ಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಎಕ್ಸೈಟೆಡ್ ಬೈ ಹಿಯರಿಂಗ್ ಆಲ್ ದಿಸ್ ದ್ಯಾನ್ ವೆನ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ದೆನ್ ದ ಡೈರೆಕ್ಟ್ಲಿ ಸಿ ಥಿಂಗ್ಸ್ ಆಲ್ಸೋ. ಸೊ ಜೀವ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಸೇಸ್ ಇನ್ ದಿಸ್ ವರ್ಸ್ ದಟ್ ದ ಕೌಹೆಡ್ ಬಾಯ್ಸ್ ದೆನ್ ರಿಲೇಟೆಡ್ ಇನ್ ಫುಲ್ ಡೀಟೇಲ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಸ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಬಲರಾಮ್ಸ್ ವಂಡರ್ಫುಲ್ ಆಕ್ಟಿವಿಟೀಸ್, ತಯೋಸ್ ತದ್ ಅದ್ಭುತಂ ಕರ್ಮ ದಾವಾಗ್ನೇರ್ ಮೋಕ್ಷಂ ಆತ್ಮನಃ. ಸೊ ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಹಿಯರ್ ಬಲರಾಮ್ಜಿ ಕಿಲ್ಡ್ ಪ್ರಲಂಬಾಸುರ್, ನಾಟ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ಬಟ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣಸ್ ನೇಮ್ ಇಸ್ ಮೆನ್ಷನ್ ಫಸ್ಟ್. ಮೆನಿ ಟೈಮ್ಸ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣಸ್ ನೇಮ್ ಕಮ್ಸ್ ಬಿಫೋರ್ ಬಲರಾಮ್ಜಿ ಆಲ್ಸೋ ಸೋ ಮೆನಿ ಟೈಮ್ಸ್, ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಇನ್ ಆಲ್ ದಿ ಆಕ್ಟಿವಿಟೀಸ್ ಆಫ್ ವೃಂದಾವನ್, ಆಲ್ ದಿ ಚೈಲ್ಡ್ಹುಡ್ ಲೀಲಾಸ್ ಆಫ್ ವೃಂದಾವನ್, ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಇಸ್ ದ ಹೀರೋ, ಬಲರಾಮ್ಜಿ ಇಸ್ ದ ಸಪೋರ್ಟಿಂಗ್ ಹೀರೋ, ರೈಟ್? ಇನ್ ಅವರ್ ಮೂವೀಸ್ ವಿ ಸೀ, ರೈಟ್? ಸೊ ದೇರ್ ಇಸ್ ಒನ್ ಹೀರೋ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೇರ್ ಇಸ್ ಸಪೋರ್ಟಿಂಗ್ ಫೆಲೋ ಕಾಮಿಡಿಯನ್, ಆರ್ ಹೀ ಡಸ್ ಮೋಸ್ಟ್ ಕಾಮಿಡಿ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಹಿ ಕೈಂಡ್ ಆಫ್ ಹಿ ಆಕ್ಸ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಎ ಕುಷನ್ ಫಾರ್ ದ ಆಕ್ಟಿವಿಟೀಸ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಹೀರೋ, ರೈಟ್? ಇನ್ ಮೂವೀಸ್ ಯು ಹ್ಯಾಸ್ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಸೀನ್, ರೈಟ್? ಇನ್ ಟಾಲಿವುಡ್ ಐ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಸೀನ್, ಐ ಡೋಂಟ್ ನೋ ಅಬೌಟ್ ಯುವರ್ ಹಿಂದಿ ಮೂವೀಸ್. ಹಿಂದಿ ಮೂವೀಸ್ ಇಸ್ ಹಾಲಿವುಡ್, ರೈಟ್? ನೋ, ಬಾಲಿವುಡ್. ಬಾಲಿವುಡ್ ಐ ಡಿಂಟ್ ಸಿ. ಸೊ ದೇರ್ ಇಸ್ ಒನ್ ಸೈಡ್ ಫೆಲೋ ಆಲ್ವೇಸ್. ಬಟ್ ಬಲರಾಮ್ಜಿ ಈಸ್ ದಿ ಸುಪ್ರೀಂ ಪರ್ಸನಾಲಿಟಿ ಆಫ್ ಸರ್ವಿಟರ್ ಗಾಡ್ ಹೆಡ್. ಸೊ ಹೀ ಆ್ಯಕ್ಸ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಎ ಕುಷನ್, ಹೀ ಆ್ಯಕ್ಸ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಎ ಸಪೋರ್ಟ್, ರೈಟ್? ಹೀ ಈಸ್ ಎನ್ ಅಕಂಪನಿಯಿಂಗ್ ಪರ್ಸನಾಲಿಟಿ ಫಾರ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ಸೊ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಇಸ್ ದ ಮೇನ್ ಹೀರೋ ಇನ್ ಆಲ್ ದ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ಟೈಮ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ವೃಂದಾವನ್. ಸೊ ಆಲ್ದೋ ಬಲರಾಮ್ಜಿ ಕಿಲ್ ಪ್ರಲಂಬಾಸುರ್, ರೈಟ್, ಸ್ಟಿಲ್ ಹೀ ಡಿಡ್ ಇಟ್ ಇನ್ ದ ಕೆಪಾಸಿಟಿ ಆಫ್ ಬೀಯಿಂಗ್ ಎ ವಾಟ್ ಟು ಸೇ ಎಸೋಸಿಯೇಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ, ರೈಟ್? ಬಟ್ ಮೋಸ್ಟ್ ಡಿಮನ್ಸ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಓನ್ಲಿ ಕಿಲ್ಡ್ ಲೈಕ್ ದಟ್. ಸೊ ಜೀವ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಸೇಸ್ ಲೈಕ್ ದಟ್. ನೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್ ಸೆಕೆಂಡ್ ವರ್ಸ್, ಗೋಪವೃದ್ಧಾಶ್ಚ ಗೋಪ್ಯಶ್ಚ ತದುಪಾಕರ್ಣ್ಯ ವಿಸ್ಮಿತಾಃ मिनिरे देव प्रवरौ कृष्णरामौ रजं गतौ.
The elder cowherd men and ladies were amazed to hear this account, and they concluded that Krishna and Balaram must be exalted demigods who had appeared in Vrindavan.
So the conclusion of all these elderly gopas and gopis is that they first got amazed. How can Krishna and Balaram do such activities? Balaramji killed Pralambasura, and Krishna swallowed forest fire and saved all the cows and other boys. Right? That was quite amazing. Gopa vriddhascha gopyascha. So Gopa Vriddhaha, all the elderly cowherdmen. Actually, younger cowherdmen also heard this, but elderly cowherdmen are specially mentioned because their astonishment was quite more. Right? So Tad Upakaranya Vismitaha. Vismitaha means they are astonished, surprised, wondered. So many re Deva Pravaro, Krishna Rama Vrajam Gatav. They were thinking that Krishna and Rama, Balramji and Krishna, must be some demigods who appeared in Vrindavan. Right? So that is their conclusion. But even if they are demigods, well, how does it matter to us? They are our sons. That is their primary identity. So the Krishna and Balaram are the object of our affection. That is the primary identity of Krishna and Balaram. Not their being demigods or gods or whatever. So although sometimes these doubts about Krishna Balaram's position might creep in for a moment in the minds of Rajavasis, they never take it seriously. In fact, Krishna Balaram's exhibition of such unparalleled prowess and opulence will only enhance their Vatsalya Rasa. Because all these elderly Vrajavasis who are in parental affection towards Krishna and Balaram, they are in pure Vatsalya. They are not in mixed Vatsalya. For example, Vasudeva and Devaki were there. When they see Krishna in 400 form, or when they see Krishna killing Kamsa and Shala, Toshala, Kota, then Chanura, Mushtika, etc., for a moment they get imbued with the feelings of Aishwarya. Vasudeva and Devaki, they get struck with Krishna's exhibition of opulence, right? And for a moment they also cannot think that this Krishna and Balaram are our dependent children. They cannot think like that for some time at least. But all the Vrindavan Vasis, this thought will never come only. Even if it comes, it's like so momentary that they can't even accommodate that thought for a moment also. Oh, they may be demigods. They were thinking like this. But if they are demigods, we are also demigods. Right? Even if they are demigods, they are dependent on us now. Right, however exalted they may be. Krishna may be lifting Govardhan or killing Keshi or Pralambasura or whatever. But he's our child. If we don't feed him, they will suffer with hunger. That is their point. So their pure affection, which is not at all tinged with any feelings of Vatsalya, is unparalleled. That is the affection of all the elderly Vrajavasis. Tata. प्रावर्तत प्रावृत सर्वसत्व समुद्भवं विद्योत्मन विद्योतमान परिधिर विस्फूर्जित नभस्थल.
Then the rainy season began, giving life and subsistence to all living beings. The sky began to rumble with thunder and lightning splashed on the horizon.
Then the rainy season began. Like this. So rainy season is said to be giving life and sustenance to all beings. Right? Sarva sattva samudbhava. It's a source of generation. When summer comes, when the summer sun is evaporating everything, all the reservoirs are getting dried up and everything is happening. Right? All plants are becoming very dry, right? So then monsoon suddenly begins somewhere in June, first week or second week. About this Vrindavan I am saying. So when that begins, it's like as if life and sustenance are coming to the nature. In 10-15 days you will see everything becoming green. Our Kohol mountain is there. So it is so dry and brownish 1 month back. 1.5 months back. So now last 1 month it's becoming so green, and all the rainfalls, what is that called, waterfalls are coming from the top of the mountain. So there is a different kind of pleasure. It becomes, atmosphere becomes very heavenly, right? Then you will really believe that it's a retreat center, right? Summer if you come, you may not feel so much. But in monsoon it happens like that. Because the nature of monsoon season is that it gives life and sustenance to all living beings. So all beings which are hiding because of the heat of summer, right, they come out when the cooling breezes of monsoon and the cooling showers of monsoon come, right? And that might create some you know, fear in Vidyapeets who are walking from Goshala to ashram. But you have to be a little careful. That's always pleasure. We are living in the nature, right? You don't get this opportunity in Mumbai. So the sky began to rumble with thunder and lightning flashed on the horizon, right? Like this. So now a series of analogies will begin. Fourth, Sandra Neelam Budair Vyoma Savidyut Stanayindubi Aspashta Jyotir Achannam Brahmeva Sagunam Babhu.
The sky was then covered by dense blue clouds, accompanied by lightning and thunder. Thus the sky and its natural illumination were covered in the same way that the spirit soul is covered by the three modes of material nature.
So sky is filled with this kind of clouds, blackish, right? Blackish blue. So sky here is compared to soul, right? And just like sky is covered by three things, lightning, thunder and dense blue clouds, similarly the soul is covered by three kinds of modes. Lightning is compared to mode of goodness, and thunder is compared to passion, because it comes with such a huge sound. Then dense blue clouds are compared to ignorance. When you say, the comparison is also very appropriate. When you say cloud, so cloud means it covers. Ignorance covers you. Thunder, it's making sound. That resembles passion. And lightning means it's like very sharp and then bright. That resembles goodness. Comparisons are also given like that. So just like sky is covered by all these three things, soul is covered by these three modes. So that is a comparison given by Sukadeva Goswami very wonderfully. So that is one. Next, in the fifth verse, Sukadeva Goswami says, Ashtau masan nipitam yad bhumyas chodamayam vasu svagobhir muktamarebhe parjanyah kala agate. So ashtau masan nipatam yad, for 8 full months sun has drunk up the wealth of the earth, right? So sun has drunk up water. So the water which is there in the different water bodies, reservoirs, is compared to the wealth of Mother Earth. So sun evaporated all that water during the winter season and summer season. So for 8 months he just evaporates, and when monsoon comes he releases it at proper time. So this is compared to king. Sun is compared to king. Here sun is evaporating. You see all this water reservoir, you can see the bottom part here, more or less, because sun is just drinking it up. This is not GV picture, it's somewhere downloaded. So maybe you can click in summer, right? By the time you people reach 10.20, you can make a more refined PowerPoint. So sun has drunk up all wealth. So sun is compared to king here. A king is there, he extracts taxes from the citizens, right? So the citizen may be thinking, what this fellow is doing, he is just, we are earning so much money with our hard labor, and this king is just taking away in the form of taxes, right? One may think like that. I'm telling you, it's bringing away the righteous kings, not necessarily the corrupt politicians. So a king is supposed to take taxes because he has the responsibility of protecting the citizens. For example, in some area, some famine comes, some drought comes. So it's king's responsibility to go and give some food there, right? because they are unable to work, or there is no way that they can generate food and all. So sometimes the ruler has to go and then give them food without work. So how will he do that? He has to fill his treasury by extracting taxes. So when he collects taxes, when there is a need to spend money, he will utilize those taxes even at the cost of emptying one's treasure house and then attend to the needs of the suffering people. Right? That is the nature of a king. Just like sun is evaporating for 8 months water, and for 4 months he is giving water. Similarly, king extract taxes whatever throughout the year, but whenever there is a need, he gives also. So that is the beautiful comparison made. So that's why we need to see that when we are, sometimes it seems that spiritual master is asking the disciple to do so many services, right? So much of service. But when the disciple is in need for proper counseling and all, spiritual master gives time. Oh, spiritual master is taking away all my time in terms of engaging me in various duties, various responsibilities. The disciple may sometimes think like that. But when disciple needs, sometimes spiritual master gives all that time. Right? So, similarly, when we are in need, we may take some things from different people. Right? But when they are in need, we should be willing to give also. There is dadati and pratigrihnati. Two things are there. Right? So, this is what it is. Son is doing dadati and pratigrihnati, both he is doing. And son is taking away this water not for his own sense gratification, only to ultimately serve him. So when we are in our association, when we are interacting with each other, there is a lot of give and take. Whenever we are taking, we should make sure that we are taking it only for the service of Krishna, not for my personal sense gratification. Even if apparently it seems that I am taking my personal facilities or something, ultimately by accepting those facilities, I am utilizing them in Krishna service only. That should be the ultimate motive. If selflessness is the underlying foundation, right, behind all this give and take business between two parties, then that give and take is wonderful. Otherwise, if selfishness creeps in between the exchanges, the dadati pratigrihnati between people, then that becomes like a business transaction. That will eventually lead to some conflicts. So one has to take things for service, not for selfish purposes. One has to give things selflessly for others' benefit. When that kind of exchange is there, then it is really wonderful. That nature is teaching us, right? We need not invent things. Bhagavatam is teaching us, and even if one has some good intelligence, he can understand all these things from the nature also. In the 11th canto, Krishna says, one can become one's own guru also. That needs a lot of connection with super soul and all that. But just by utilizing one's intelligence and then understands things in this way, but just by seeing this natural phenomena, if one has very good intelligence, he can understand that the sun is taking it and then giving it back. I should also be doing like that. So there is a personal application just by observing a natural phenomena. Right? So, like that, if one can analyze this nature and then try to derive some sensible lessons, then one can, in that sense, one can become one's own guru also, right? But ultimately, if one becomes one's own guru like this by observing the natural phenomena, he will eventually understand a personality behind all this natural phenomena. Who is orchestrating like this? Definitely I observe that sun is taking water and then giving water back. But who orchestrated this? Who is behind this? Who ran the show? Who decided that this has to happen? So by contemplating and trying to understand so many things from the phenomena of the nature, one will come to a conclusion that there is some supreme person who is behind all this natural phenomena. We'll see so many natural phenomena now. So, if one uses his intelligence and try to understand things, he will understand that God is behind it. He may not understand that him as a God. There must be some supreme person who is orchestrating this whole thing. When that is happening, he will eventually come to the association of devotees. Oh, there must be some supreme person behind all this natural phenomena. Is there anyone who knows that supreme person nicely? Let me search for them. He will start searching people, right? Who knows that supreme person behind this natural phenomena? Eventually, he will end up in the association of devotees. Then eventually, he will be connected to the path of devotional service. Like that. So like that one, just by observing a natural phenomena, if one has the right intelligence, then he can eventually be connected to the process of devotional service also. Like that. So next verse is number 6, right? 6. Tadidvanto Mahamegha Chandasvasana Vepito Preenanam Jeevanam Hyasya Mumunchuh Karuna Iva. Yeah, even for the before analogy, Prabhupada writes like this, that king is supposed to use all these taxes for public welfare work, like that. These are some purport analogies. So water is earth's wealth, it is compared to collecting taxes, this we have discussed. So raining at proper time is taxes to be utilized for public welfare, like that. So this is clicked by Anupam Gauranga only here. Behind, when it is raining, behind our Garbhagraha, he clicked this. Nice, right? Nah, next verse. Read the 6th verse.
Flashing with lightning, great clouds were shaken and swept about by fierce winds. Just like merciful persons, the clouds gave their lives for the pleasure of this world.
So flashing and lightning. Right? Flashing with lightning, clouds were shaken and swept away by fierce winds. So clouds gave their lives for the pleasure of the world. So cloud is there, it is containing a lot of water, but it is floating in the sky. Did you ever reflect on this? So cloud is containing so much of water, but it is just flowing like a cotton swab in the ether. That means Krishna has given it that potency. Krishna has the ability to make millions of universes float in the outer space. Can't he float a cloud which has little few liters of water, maybe few thousands of liters of water? It's just floating in the sky. He can make stones float on the water. He can make planets float in the outer space. He can make universes float in the casual ocean, right? So that he can do anything. He can make clouds also float in the sky. So when that cloud is, you know, shaken and swept by fierce winds, so cloud pours rain, right? So cloud pours rain for what? For the pleasure of the world. So cloud means it's containing water there and it is emptying itself. It is giving itself completely for the pleasure of the people. That shows selflessness on the part of the cloud. Similarly, merciful people, merciful rich people, not conjusy rich people, right? Merciful rich people. So they give away their wealth for the happiness of the society. Just like clouds give away their everything. Clouds contain water and then that one entire water is given for the pleasure of the world. Similarly, rich people have a lot of money, wealth. They give it away in the form of donations. Okay, aapko mandir banana le lo. Right? I give this few lakhs for your making of so-and-so deity, making of so-and-so altar, making of so-and-so, part of a temple. So like that, they just give. That is their mercy. Similarly, when we have some wealth and we have some possessions, we have some skills, we have some time, these are all our possessions. For brahmachari, he may not have a lot of wealth. At the max, he can have an iPhone or Mac or something like that. That's the only wealth he has. So that plus, he may have some skill set, soft. You can't see it in physically, but he has a lot of skill set. He has a lot of time. So the time and skills and whatever little possessions that he have, he can utilize it for others. So when someone is in renounced order, his time is meant for others. By utilizing his time for the welfare of others, he will work for the welfare of his own self. Tapyante lokatapena sadhava prayesho janaha Paramaradhanam taddhi purushasya akhilatmanah. Tapa. Tapa means austerity. Austerity is of two types. One austerity is done for the welfare of one's own self. Right? There is austerity of body, austerity of mind, austerity of speech. There are so many kinds of austerities that one has to do for one's own self, one's own upliftment. But there is another kind of austerity that you do for the welfare of others. Tapyante lokatapena sadhava prayasho janah paramaradhanam taddhi purushasya akhilatmanah. So by engaging in an austerity for the welfare of other people, you please the Lord a lot. Right? Paramaradhanam, that is the greatest form of worship. By utilizing one's own energies, skills, time and possessions for others' welfare will cause great pleasure to Krishna. Like that. It's not mere philanthropic activity. That's not what I'm speaking here. For the upliftment of one's soul. Prabhupada writes like that. Welfare activity doesn't mean you just somebody is suffering from hunger and then you just feed him. Right? Thinking that he is Daridra Narayan. Right? And thinking that my oneself is a very great charitable personality. So in that kind of philanthropical activities, there is a lack of understanding of the spiritual position of the soul. There is a pride that is involved, that I am the deliverer of this fellow. He is poor fellow and I am serving him. Right? Without me, he cannot sustain. So there is that kind of pride is involved. Some lack of spiritual understanding is involved. So that kind of philanthropical activity is not what is recommended by the Shastras. The actual greatest philanthropical work is for the upliftment of the soul. Right? So when somebody is drowning in the water, in some river or ocean, something like that, and if you protect his coat, what a big deal. It's not, you are not actually helping that fellow. Right? You can't do that. So Prabhupada says, helping a person means helping the soul. Spiritual advancement of the person. So that is the main thing. I think this will affect the laptop also. We'll go somewhere inside. Monsoon in Vrindavan is making us change positions. So now that is compared to clouds flashing with lightning or compared to merciful persons. That's what we have seen. So that is another analogy. Next. So in so after summer, water is very urgently needed. So clouds exhaust themselves by distributing sumptuous water. Similarly, rich man, at the times of needs, he distributes his money even by exhausting his whole treasury. So that is the point. And there is one analogy in the purport that Dasarath Maharaj's fight, he was fighting with his enemies. It is like farmer uprooting unnecessary plants. See, here, in agriculture, so some people are in agriculture. Sridhar Pran Prabhu is in agriculture. So you plant some proper plants and then sometimes unnecessary plants will come. So one has to pluck out those weeds. Right? So that is this. So king's fight is actually a farmer uprooting weeds. When a king is fighting with enemies, he is killing such unscrupulous people, that is compared to a farmer uprooting weeds. That another beautiful analogy comes in the purport. And king's charity is compared to clouds, rain. Second, so when there is sufficient downpour of rains, when there is sufficient downpour, so rains fall even on rocks, hills and oceans where there is no need of water also. Similarly, a charitable person, so he distributes. He distributes treasure open-heartedly and he does not discriminate. Are you able to hear me? Or I have to increase the volume? You can hear me? Alexis Prabhu, you can hear me? Okay. So this analogy from this purport says that when the rich man is in such Mahavadanyaya Bhav, right, He doesn't discriminate between people also. For example, Mahaprabhu came. Right? Namo Mahavadanyaya, Krishna Prema Pradayate. He opened the treasure house of love of Godhead and he distributed charity profusely. Patra apatra na dekhi. He doesn't even see whether it is whether this fellow is qualified or not. He just distributes charity. Similarly, the cloud is now profusely, you know, pouring rain. For example, on an ocean, on a river, there is no need of rain. But rain will come on the water body also. So now these people are tilling the land. You see from here, some bulls are there. So they are tilling the land. There may be rice plantation there and there is some water needed there. So raining there will make sense. Raining on Kohoz mountain may not make much sense. Right? It's already clean. 10 days rain happened, 20 days rain happened. Everything became clean. What is the purpose of pouring more rain? Right? But when the cloud is in Mahavadanyaya Bhav, it just pours rains so profusely, like Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu's mercy is compared to cloud's rain, like that. So that is this, raining on water body also, you see. So next analogy is that all these blowing winds are blowing, right? They are compared to the heavy breathing of a diseased person. A diseased person also will breathe. For example, you have some fever, some people have dengue, right? They breathe also heavily. Hot air comes from their nose. So winds are compared to like that, diseased person. Second, this, my God, this rain is, are you able to hear me? Huh? Okay. So distressed to see earth's condition, clouds tremble in the wind. Like a compassionate person, they pour down earth, right? Because when cloud is raining, it is compared to a distressed person. A person gets distressed by seeing others distressed. Para dukkha dukkhi. So because of that dukkha, they will nicely pour rain, all these clouds. Then the next verse is 7th verse. Tapah Krishna Deva Meedham. Tapah Krishna Deva Meedam Asid Varshi Yasi Mahi Yathaiva Kamya Tapasa Tanu Samprapya Tat Phalam.
The earth had been emaciated.
Someone read the translation.
The earth had been emaciated.
Let's see if it is here. You can hear it.
The earth had been emaciated by the summer heat, but she became fully nourished again when moistened by the god of rain. Thus the earth was like a person whose body has been emaciated by austerities undergone for a material purpose, but who again becomes fully nourished when he achieves the fruit of those austerities.
So you see this land on the screen, so that is emaciated earth. So sun has evaporated water from the surface of the earth for 8 full months. Earth has become emaciated completely, right? No water at all. You see, we have one pond behind Ayurveda. We have one pond next to Gardabshala. In the peak of monsoon, in the peak of summer, April, May, you see, there is almost nil water. Hardly any water, you see. Now they are full. In 10 days they will become full. 1 crore liters are full in 10 days only. Within 10 days or 3 days sometimes. So an emaciated person, a person gets emaciated by doing austerities, right? But when he gets the fruit of his austerities, he feels really happy. He feels nourished. Just like Mother Earth is emaciated because of the summer heat, it gets nourished because of monsoon rain. Like that. This analogy is clear? Okay, next. In the purport, you see this. When rain comes, although the earth's surface is quite dry, all the green plants will automatically sprout. Green grass will automatically come from earth. That is compared to this beautiful picture. So, now we will discuss the 9th verse. Prabhupada writes, undergoing austerities is not a very Mike. Because we are discussing about monsoon in Vrindavan, monsoon is not allowing us to discuss only.
What is the meaning of austerities for material purpose?
So, austerities for material purpose. For example, Hiranyakasipu is there. He did lot of austerity for material purpose, to become immortal. And Ravana is there. He did lot of austerity for material purpose. Right? So, when someone does austerity, Hiranyakasipu, if you see, he did austerity and then half of his body became like bones only. And there were ants also flowing inside. He was sustaining only on life airs. Right? No water, no drink, nothing. No food. So, he did an austerity for a material purpose. So, when someone does austerity for material purpose, and if he gets it, Brahmaji came and gave a benediction for him. Right? He became nourished. He felt happy. There is satisfaction in him. Even if you do austerity for a material purpose and get emaciated because of that, there is definitely lot of satisfaction and nourishment after that. So Prabhupada writes, what to speak of an austerity that is done for Krishna's satisfaction. How much nourishment you will get. How much satisfaction you will get. That is the actual purpose. Right? Are you able to hear here, or shall we shift the venue to amenities? You're able to hear, but projector and laptop should not become... This will not be the last use of that projector and laptop. Okay, let's try, continue for some time. That is clear, Prabhu? Madhav Prem, Prabhu, is it clear? You only asked the question. So, next. Next is number 8. Nishamukhe shukhadyotah tamasa bhantinagrinah yatha papena pashanda nahi vedah kalau yuge.
In the evening twilight, during the rainy season, the darkness allowed the glowworms but not the stars to shine forth. Just as in the age of Kali, the predominance of sinful activities allows atheistic doctrines to overshadow the true knowledge of the Vedas.
Okay. See this. In the evening darkness, sometimes if you come in the evening, there are lot of glowworms. They are glowing. So in monsoon, sun will not glow so much. You hardly see sun now, sunshine. But you can understand that it is daytime because there is some trace of sunlight. But you can't actually see suns and stars in the monsoon season. But in the darkness of the night, all these glowworms will glow. Right? So when there is Kali Yuga, all these atheistic philosophies, Mayavadic philosophies and substandard religious principles, they glow more than the eternal principles of Krishna consciousness. Right? So that is the analogy here. So there is glowworms. All these glowworms are compared to atheistic doctrines that overshadow the knowledge of Vedas, the bona fide knowledge. So why there are so many, in South India if you go, people get attracted to a lot of deity worship, which is centered around chanting of so many mantras. Most of them are bona fide mantras, but most pujaris who are chanting those mantras don't know the meaning. That they hardly know the meaning of the mantras. Deja namaste astu bhagavan nishveshtaraya mahadevaya trayambakaya tripurantakaya trikagni kalaya kalagni rudraya neelakanthaya mrityunjayaya sarveshwaraya sadashivaya srivan mahadevaya nama swaha. Right? And they say, Om Dacham Yora Vridivahe Gatum Yajnaya Gatum Yajnapadaye. When this lot of chant is going on, people think it is fantastic. It's far out. Right? They get attracted. So some people asked me, in your ISKCON temples, pujari is doing worship, hardly he chants any mantra. We don't hear only. sometimes they put some tape. Prabhupada, Hare Krishna, only that much we hear. So in South India, most temples, whichever temple you go, whichever demigod temple go, Vishnu temple you go, then Shiva temple, Durga temple, Ayappa temple, right, Kali temple, Shini temple, whichever temple you go, there is some mantra. Pujari will take, he will come with a plate and you have to touch some paraphernalia and he will chant and he will do puja on your name. Right? So, so and so namadhesya, so and so gotrodbhavasya, kalyugaya pradamavade, jambudvipe, bhartavarshe, bhartakande, beroho, dakshin dikbhage, sri selesya, ishanya pradeshe, andhra pradeshe, like that they just... So like that they just chant so many mantras and make you feel good. Right? Make you feel good that puja is happening in your name. The only thing the pilgrim understands is his own name. He has chanted Madhav Sharma Namadesya. Huh? What is your name? Shobhit Namadesya. Only that much he will understand. Baki remaining all the mantras that pujari chanted, this person, pilgrim, doesn't understand. And at least 90 to 95% of the cases, pujari also doesn't understand. So pujari just ratta mardiya pura. He just recited all that just for something. After puja, he closed down, he wears pant shirt, right, removes dhoti, goes out on cycle, cigarette, all this will happen. We have seen our pujaris there, like that, in South India. In Andhra, I have seen so many pujaris like that. They have dual game. Morning puja and evening some other puja. Some other puja will happen there. So in Kali Yuga, all the substandard religious principles will take over. Right? So the actual religious principles of eternal service to Krishna is gone. We are studying Bhagavatam. In Bhagavatam, such substandard religious principles are not entertained. Dharma projita kaitavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. Dharma projita kaitava. Kaitava dharma is rejected right in the second verse of Bhagavatam. Savai pumsam paro dharma, second chapter. This is paro dharma. Even varnashram dharma we can't accept. Varnashram dharma, eighth verse of second chapter, is not the paro dharma. Right? So no substandard religious principles are mentioned in Bhagavatam. But in Kali Yuga, that is filled with substandard religious principles. Dharma, that is done to get artha. Artha, which is meant for kama. If you are frustrated in your desires for kama, sense gratification, then think about moksha. This is what the dharma line in the Kali Yuga. But Bhagavatam doesn't support that. All these glowworms are compared to that Kaitava dharma. Kali Yuga, that will become more. Okay? That is about glowworms. Next. Prabhupada writes, as soon as some yajna, some worship, something is going on, Prabhupada brings out Sankirtan. Right? We have Sankirtan movement. Right? So that is the verse number 8. No, verse number 9. Shrutva parjanya nidanam manduka sasrujur gira tushnim sayana pragyadvad brahmana niyamatyaye.
The frogs who had all along been lying silent suddenly began croaking when they heard the rumbling of the rain clouds. In the same way that the Brahmana students who perform their morning duties in silence begin reciting their lessons when called by their teacher.
See, another analogy. Frogs get active, right? Now you sleep in the night, you will only hear that sound. I can't make that sound. But constantly frogs are, you know, doing some sound. Someone can make? Some mimicry artist is here. You can attempt. Okay, so frogs make sounds, they get excited, they come out. You see more frogs in monsoon than other seasons, right? So there used to be one well here that is filled with big frogs, right? Sometimes the frogs come here also. So there's all monsoon effect. So now, when your emotions are suppressed for a long time, And when you suddenly get some opportunity, that just comes out like anything, right? So frogs were suppressing their emotions for a long time. Now when rain, they saw rain, they just came out and then they are ecstatic. Their hairs were standing on end, right? They don't allow anyone to sleep in the night, right? That's what is happening. So frogs coming out and croaking is compared to Brahmana students reciting their Vedic mantras, right? The guru calls, just like monsoon calls, frogs will come out and then make their sounds. Guru calls, all these Vedic people, they come and begin in their recitations. So this is like parrot-like recitations. Don't compare this with your sloka recitation that you do. Dharma projita, janma adhyasyata, that's on a different level. But some Brahmana students kind of do it as a ritualistic way of reciting, like that. So, everyone is sleeping in darkness of Kali Yuga, but only by the calling of a great Acharya, everyone takes to Vedic study to acquire actual knowledge. So, there is one positive way of looking at it, this analogy also, that frogs come out in monsoon and then make some sounds. So that is, when great Acharya comes and calls, that is actually beneficial for the people of this age. In the 10th canto, 2nd chapter, all the demigods offer prayers, Garbhastuti. Right? Garbhastuti they offer. In that prayers, one verse comes. Swayam samuttirya sudustaram diman. In that, bhavarnavam bhiva madabra sauhrudaha. Bhavat padam boruha navamatyate. So, actually, all the acharyas have performed a lot of devotional service and they came up with a process. Acharyas have came up with a method for crossing this material ocean, right? So, when acharyas propose that kind of method, Lord mercifully approves that method and accepts that this is the process of deliverance for this age of Kali. Right, and Krishna approves that method, and by following that method, people in general get delivered. Prabhupada said, 16 rounds you chant. That is his morning program you attend. You chant 16 rounds. You follow four regulative principles. You hear Bhagavatam. You chant holy name. So like that, Prabhupada gave a method. So Krishna approved it. And by following this method, which is actually proposed by great Acharya, we will delivered. We will be delivered. Like that. So the calling of a great Acharya is very beneficial for the people in general, right? So that is the beautiful lesson that we can learn from the 8th verse, 9th verse. Now 10th verse. 10th verse is Asan Utpatha Gaminyah Kshudranadyo Nushushita Pumso yatha svatantrasya deha dravina sampada.
With the advent of the rainy season, the insignificant streams which had become dry began to swell and then strayed from their proper courses, like the body, property and money of a man controlled by the urges of his senses.
So dry streams began to swell and strayed from their courses. Right, so dry stream. This is also our jeevi only. You go little ahead, then you will find like this, beyond the pond. Right, and this also, hankering after an ocean of happiness. You see, obtaining only a drop. So small rivulets and ponds overflow in monsoon, but become dry again in dry season. Like that. So these two analogies are giving us. So dry streams are there. They swell up. Right, they are away from the courses. For example, a river is there, it has a certain course. It has something, some substance in it, some depth in it, some path in it, and that path is more or less fixed. Right, unless some whatever floods, something come, generally that path is fixed. But there are so many small rivulets and dry streams, right? When monsoon is there, it seems it's a big water reservoir here. But as soon as monsoon is gone, autumn is gone, and then winter comes, you don't see it. There used to be a pond here. There is no pond only here. So in monsoon, it just swells up. Extra enthusiasm, over enthusiasm. It just comes up. So So Radhishyam Prabhu says like that, it's flower pot enthusiasm. In Diwali we have this crackers, right? Flower pot is there, it just comes. So just for 1 minute it is there, then after that everything is gone. And Prabhuji gives the next is 10,000 wala. 10,000 wala. We just put there, tap, 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 like that for 1 hour, it just comes. It constantly is there. Like that. So that 10,000 wala is the river. Right? This flower pot is this dry streams. Only in monsoon, they appear to be existing. They appear to be overflowing. See, this is overflowing like this. After 2 months you go, you don't see any water there. Right? So, hankering after ocean of happiness, obtaining only a drop. That is the lesson given there. So, body, property and money of a man is controlled by the urges of his senses. Right? Prabhupada quotes this poet, Vidyapati. In our materialistic way of life, which is like a desert, we hanker after an ocean of happiness. But in the form of society, friends and mundane love, we get no more than a drop of water, insignificant happiness. So, the living entity in this material world is never satisfied. Right? Apparently, it seems that there is a lot of happiness in this world. Momentarily, it seems like that. So, momentarily, this pond is filled with water. But after some time, it's gone. Similarly, in this material world also, with the family, with friends and with the society and with all our possessions, right, gadgets, cars, bungalows, etc., it seems that there is overwhelming happiness for a while. After some time, it's gone. When new car is, you know, purchased, all the family gets excited. After 2-3 days, that excitement is gone. Maybe after a week or a month, that excitement is gone. Right, when you have to maintain that car, and then in monsoon you drive that car and a lot of keejad comes on it, you have to clean that car. Right, in summer if you have to travel, you enter the car, it's like as if you are in an oven. Right, you put on AC, your health gets spoiled, petrol charges are high. So like that, there is a lot of distress associated with meager amount of happiness. Right, so ham ranam kshulla sukhaya dukkham mahad. For kshulla sukha, there is mahad dukkham. That is the nature of this world. So, in this context, Prabhupada gives that beautiful analogy. Next, 11th verse. 11th verse is about newly grown grass, like this. This is also GV picture.
Harita haribhisha shashpair Indra gopaischa lohita Uchchili indra kritachaya Ranam Shrir Iva Bhura Bhut.
The newly grown grass made the earth emerald green. The Indragopa insects added a reddish hue, and white mushrooms added further color and circles of shade. Thus the earth appeared like a person who has suddenly become rich.
So there are 2-3 elements mentioned in this verse analogies. First is newly grown grass. The grass is coming, it's very bright. See, it's so bright here. In my laptop, it's even brighter. The screen mein thoda kam ho gaya brightness. So, it's so bright, so fluorescent green, right? Very attractive to the mind and eyes, right? So, it's compared to emerald green. Grass, the surface of the land has become emerald green. On top of it, there are Indragopa insects. Indragopa insect has some reddish bodily hue. So, with red, there is green. Emerald green grasses and top of it Indragopa insects that are adding a reddish hue. Later, there are some mushrooms. This is taken just behind our temple hall only, this mushroom photo. Mushroom is white. So white, red and green. Like today's DT dress. You see, there is white, red and green for Radha Vrindavan Vihari. So it's very pleasing to the eyes and senses, mind. That mind becomes very satisfied. So earth has appeared. Earth is appearing as if it is very, it has become very rich. So far it is brownish only, only one color. Right, only one color. So it's very dry. Now, because of this new rain, there is emerald green grass, there are reddish Indragopa insects, there are whitish or creamish mushrooms, and earth, it seems that earth has become very rich. Like that. So next, 12th verse.
Kshetrani shasya sampadbhi కర్షకాణాం ముదం దదుః మానినాం అనుతాపం వై దైవాధీనం అజానతాం.
With their wealth of grains, the fields gave joy to the farmers. But those fields created remorse in the hearts of those who were too proud to engage in farming and who failed to understand how everything is under the control of the Supreme.
Yeah, before that, in the previous verse we said, right, earth is appearing emerald green and then whitish and reddish hue. So that is compared to the royal parade of military strength of a king. King also, when he comes with all his parade and companions, associates, paraphernalia, he also appears very rich, right? So earth also is appearing very rich. That is about the previous analogy. This is some cartoon thing. So next is this. So fields gave joy to farmers and remorse to proud people. So this needs some explanation, that when rain comes, all these land tillers and then agriculture farmers and our department, agriculture department here, they become ecstatic. All the farmers around Galtari, Nani and all who are doing rice plantation, they become very happy when in a certain season, certain year, if the rainfall is less, rice plantation will suffer, right? Farmers become morose because farmers' focus is in growing food, and that food is available for entire humanity throughout the year. So farmer's role is extremely important, very important. Right? If farmer doesn't grow food, where will the city people eat? City fellow will never see a kheti only. He never touched a bull. He never knew how a cow looks like. If he sees a cow, he will think, who is this horse? Right? Is this horse? What breed is it? Some people may say like that. Some school trips, children may come, right? They may not even recognize cow also. So such people, such proud people, who just pay some money, notes, and then get grains to eat. So such people cannot understand the hard work and hard labor of the farmers. So such people, when monsoon comes, they ridicule monsoon. They say, stop it, no more rain. I have to go to office in my car. And because of this rain, I'm unable to travel. All the roads have become little muddy. I have to clean my car, that is his problem, right? I have to go to movie, I have to go to some shopping mall, but because this rain is creating a lot of trouble for me. So that's how they condemn this rain and they say, I don't like this rain anymore, right? So proud people become very disgusted with this rain, but farmers become ecstatic with the rain. Ultimately, farmer's ecstasy will feed this proud person, right? So, if farmer grows the food in rain, then the proud person will be able to eat. Otherwise, he cannot survive only. That he cannot understand. That point is explained in this verse. So, this farmer, how they do is, they grow this rice in one place, right, very closely, compact, and then they separate it out and then make this kind of bundles, right? You see these bundles? And these bundles, they just spread over, you know, bigger lands, right? So this practice is there. We also did rice plantation in our initial days here. So the next verse is, which verse? 13th verse, okay. Jalasthalokasa sarve navavari nishevaya అభిభ్రన్ రుచిరం రూపం యథా హరిణి సేవయ.
As all the creatures of the land and water took advantage of the newly fallen rainwater, their forms became attractive and pleasing, just as a devotee becomes beautiful by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord.
These are all vegetables grown by the farmers. So in the 13th thing, 13th chapter, verse, he says, forms of all creatures of land and water become attractive and pleasing. All creatures, they become attractive, right? All the cows become ecstatic, and then even crabs also, you see here and there. These are our jeevi crab. I don't know where is it now. This is 1 or 2 years back. And they become attractive. So devotees also become blissful by engaging in Lord's service. So by just like all the living entities become blissful in this monsoon season, similarly devotees become blissful when they perform devotional service. Right? That is the message in the 13th verse. So Prabhupada writes, transformation in dirty looking students happened after practicing Krishna consciousness. Right? Dirty looking students. That is because of ISKCON. Their health improved, their luster improved, they're in saffron and tilak, appeared like men of Vaikuntha. Just like all these creatures in monsoon are appearing ecstatic, similarly by practicing Krishna consciousness, hippies became happies and then they became ecstatic. They are appearing like Vaikuntha men. That is the analogy Prabhupada gives. Sukadeva Goswami gives an analogy, Prabhupada gives one more analogy. Right? Now you will come up with more analogies after break. 10:20, okay. 13th verse. 14th verse. Saridbhi sangata sindhu chukshobhasvachanorminam apakvayoginaschittam kamaktam gunayugyatha.
Where the rivers joined the ocean, it became agitated, its waves blown about by the wind. Just as the mind of an immature yogi becomes agitated because he is still tainted by lust and attached to the objects of sense gratification.
See, when rivers are meeting the ocean, sometimes there is agitation, especially in monsoon. Right? One water body is meeting with another body. Right? The meeting becomes quite agitating. Right? Sometimes it's fierce also. So that agitation caused by meeting of two water bodies is compared to the agitation of the mind of an immature devotee, immature yogi. So his mind is constantly thinking of sense gratification. Matra sparshechaya muhuhu. Constantly there is an attempt and contemplation to bring one's senses in contact with the sense objects. Because of that there is a lot of agitation. He can't stay cool. He's so restless. Right? But he knows, I have to progress on this path. Right? This is ultimately meant for my self-realization, but my mind is agitating me. Right? How it is agitating? Just like two water bodies meet each other in monsoon. That is the analogy there. So next 15th verse. Girayo varshadharabhir. Hanyamana navivyathu. Abhibhuyamana vyasanair yatha adhoksha jachetasaha.
Just as devotees whose minds are absorbed in the personality of Godhead remain peaceful even when attacked by all sorts of dangers, the mountains in the rainy season were not at all disturbed by the repeated striking of the rain-bearing clouds.
So the previous verse describes about the agitation that is caused by meeting of two water bodies. Right, when river meets ocean or something like that, there is agitation. But there is another natural phenomena that doesn't involve any agitation. On a mountain, there is lot of rainfall, repeated rainfall. Clouds are directly touching the mountain also sometimes. You see, Kohoz, there is a lot of mountain, there are a lot of clouds touching. So, but mountain becomes undisturbed. This is also Kohoz only. So mountain becomes undisturbed because of the rain-bearing clouds. Similarly, devotees become undisturbed even in the times of danger. Right? So, an immature yogi is getting disturbed because of uncontrolled senses. But a mature devotee will not get disturbed, like a mountain. Mature devotee is compared to a mountain that doesn't get disturbed in rain. But an immature yogi is compared to a water body that gets agitated in rain. So, at this point, we may be at the level of a river, a water body that gets agitated because of rain. So we should eventually come to a stage of mountain that doesn't get agitated by water. Like that. So, But mountain is fixed in its position, but river is moving from one place to another place. So all these analogies, right, you just stick to that one element that we are highlighting. River has its own advantage. Here river is presented as a lower thing. River is compared to an immature yogi, mountain is compared to a mature yogi. That doesn't indicate a comparison between river and mountain. Right? That's a comparison between mature yogi and immature yogi in terms of they're getting agitated to disturbances. Matra sparshyastu kaunteya sita ushna sukha dukkhadaha agamo apayuno anityaha tam stitikshasva bharata. So we somehow get accustomed to tolerate the seasons. Sita ushna sukha dukkhada. So sita ushna we can tolerate. When some rain comes, we use raincoats and umbrellas, somehow we get accustomed. Right? Sometimes we may curse the rain, sometimes we may curse the cold, sometimes we may curse the heat. But more or less we make arrangements to protect ourselves from the Sita and Ushna, natural calamities. But hardly there is any arrangement where we develop some consciousness to tolerate Sukha and Dukkha. The way you are tolerating Sita and Ushna, that way you should tolerate Sukha and Dukkha. That's what Krishna says. Matra sparshyastu kaunteya sitoshna sukha dukkhata agamo apayana. Just like the Sita and Ushna are coming and going, Sukha and Dukkha are also coming and going. Sitoshna sukha dukkhata. So tam stitikshasva bharata. That one has to tolerate. So the attacks on this gross body, which is made of air, water, ether, fire, etc., other elements, right, that we are somehow accustomed to tolerate. Oh, winter is coming, let's be ready with socks and some winter clothes, sweaters and shawls, etc. Summer is coming, okay, let's prepare ourselves in a different way. Monsoon is coming, let's prepare ourselves in a different way. So we are, you know, planning to, you know, tolerate the natural calamities many times, but we don't sufficiently plan for the attacks that are coming on the internal body, subtle body, mind, intelligence, ego. What plan have we made to tolerate the onslaughts of this material nature on our mind, on our intelligence, on our ego? When someone makes a better point than us, our intelligence gets defeated, we get agitated. Someone may intellectually defeat us, someone may torment us mentally, someone may inflict a lot of pain in our mind, someone may crush our ego. What arrangements have we made? Right? We have made arrangements for summer, monsoon and winter. We have not sufficiently made arrangements for mind and intelligence and ego calamities, whatever disturbances come there. So when one is able to do that, Sita, Ushna, Sukha, Dukkhada, right, when you can understand that Sukha and Dukkha is also Agamo, Apayino, Anitya, and do Tatitikshasva, he is eligible for liberation. What is 2.15? Bhakti Shastri people? 2.15. Go in the group. Go in the. Go on. Fourth chapter. You entered fourth chapter, fifth chapter. What is 2.15? Here in Bhakti Shastri, right? 1.5. What is 2.14? What is the verse after that? Dehinosmin. My God. Prabhupada will laugh. Okay, that is 12, I think. Next, 15. Yamhina vyatayante te purusham purusharshabha sama dukkha sukham dhiram so amrutatvaya kalpate. Sama dukkha sukham dhiram. If one is dhira in dukkha and sukha, amrutatvaya kalpate. He is eligible for liberation. Titiksha is important. So in this context, we can definitely see that one, in one's sadhana, bhakti, one has to progress from the stage of being agitated because of mind to the stage of being not agitated because of mind. Like a mountain, achala. So devotees remain peaceful even in danger. See, mountain is peaceful. So many clouds are directly attacking his mountain. Ka peak is not visible only. Still, mountain is happy, bindas. This also. On top of it, mountain will take advantage of it. Rain is coming, it's okay, I'll become clean. When rain comes, so nobody does a maha cleaning of a mountain. Right? So you do maha cleaning of your ashram and then goshala and then cows also you clean, but you don't clean a mountain, right? But when rain comes, maha cleaning will happen, right? Everything becomes very clean on the mountain. So rain apparently seems like a calamity, but mountain has the expertise to convert that calamity into an opportunity for purification, right? So when rain is coming, mountain is not feeling the burden and agitation, but oh, because so much of the rain is coming, I'm getting cleaned. So all the calamities that are coming in one's life are meant for one's purification.
Tattenukampam susamikshamanam bhunjana eva atmakritam vipakam hridvag vapurbhir vidadhan namaste.
So one just offers obeisances out of gratitude towards the Supreme Lord with one's mind, action and words. One offers obeisances to the Lord, thanking Him. Thank you, Krishna. I deserve more punishment, more calamity, but you have given me this much calamity only, right? I am grateful to you. Actually, this is a result of my past activities, right? This is meant for my purification. Just like mountain says like that. Oh, rain is coming. It's okay. I'll become green. I'll become clean. Clean and green. Rain causes clean and green mountain. That is mountain's ecstasy. Similarly, one also has to imbibe this quality of a mountain within one's sadhana. Is this understandable for the junior batch? Simple analysis. This is understandable for anyone actually. These are all simple topics. So which verse we are in? So devotee accepts reversals in life as mercy of Krishna, realizing that all suffering is due to one's own previous misdeeds. Okay, we have discussed. 16th verse.
Marga bhavas sandigdha. Trinais channahya samskrita. Nabhyasyamana shrutayo. Dvijaihi kalena chahata.
During the rainy season, the roads, not being cleansed, become covered with grass and debris and were thus difficult to make out. These roads were like religious scriptures that Brahmanas no longer study and that thus become corrupted and covered over with the passage of time.
Symptoms. 16th. What is 16th? Yeah, roads not cleansed become covered with grasses. Oh, this is about the previous analogy only. Okay, mountains cleansed by dirt. All this we have discussed already. Next, roads. This is the 16th one. So, roads are not cleansed. Now you see so many pathways are there in our regular winter or summer. They become covered with grasses. So much of grass is grown in monsoon. Everything becomes green. You don't understand where is the path only. So roads are not cleansed and are covered with grass. And it's difficult to make out that there is a pathway here. If someone barely makes out that there is a pathway here and then tries to walk there, some creature will come and then may bite us. There is always that fear. You see, already the plants have grown up for whatever 1 feet or 1.5 feet tall. And then you fear walking in that pathway, even if you are familiar with that path. So similarly, scriptures that Brahmanas no longer study covered over with passage of time. If you don't brush up your skills or brush up your memory by regularly studying Shastra, one will forget it. Now in these 2 years you will study so much of Bhagavatam. You will recite so many verses every day. Every day is a sloka recitation. After 2 years, once in a month if you can recite few slokas, that becomes a big thing. Right? Before, whatever, 1 month, how much you have been reciting slokas? Daily? Every day? Every week? Every month? So like that. So now we got into a habit of studying Shastra and reciting slokas on a regular basis. If that habit one doesn't continue, it will just go away. Just like a pathway, if it is not used because of this rains or monsoon, that just covered up with grass and you can't make out there is a pathway here only. right? Even if you make out that there is a path, you will hesitate to walk in it. Some creature, some snake may be hiding in this, between these bushes, grasses. It may bite me. Right? If a child just goes there, mother will control him. Hey, don't go there. Right? Something may bite you. Like that. So, one has to regularly be in touch with the Shastra. That is very important. Chakravartipada writes in the commentary of first canto of Bhagavatam. I think right in the first verse only, beginning. All the Shastric conclusions are meant to give us satisfaction of heart. All the commentaries or explanations or descriptions of Shastras are meant to give us satisfaction. Give the reader the satisfaction of the heart. That satisfaction is compared to a treasure. Treasury. In the treasury there is a lot of money, right? A lot of gold, a lot of necklaces, a lot of diamonds and then rubies and there is a lot of precious things that are there in the treasure. So that precious objects that are there in the treasure are compared to satisfaction of heart. Are you with me? That is satisfaction of heart. And who is the watchman? Night watchman is the commentaries. So scriptures have the ability to give you satisfaction of that heart, and that is in the hands of a commentator. A bona fide commentator can bring out all those meanings from the scriptures and give the reader the satisfaction of the heart. You see? But when he's like a night watchman. So watchman is the commentator or the commentaries, and satisfaction of the heart is the treasure. But if the watchman sleeps, what will happen? Thieves will steal the treasure. Right? Similarly, if bona fide commentator sleeps, what will happen? Misinterpreters will take over the Shastra and give wrong explanations and spread wrong messages and then divert people to different understandings. That is why one has to study the bona fide commentaries of Acharyas and elaborate on them and expand on them and help people understand those bona fide commentaries. This makes sense? Any thoughts on this? Any questions on this? Any reflections on this? One has to study the scripture. One has to study the explanations of Prabhupada, Chakravartipada, and all the bona fide Acharyas to get the right understanding of the scriptures. That will satisfy our heart. Otherwise, satisfaction will sleep. Satisfaction will become inaccessible. And unauthorized commentaries will take over and give wrong explanations. Right? So the bona fide people who have right understanding of Mahabharata, Bhagavatam, etc., they did not speak. So many non-bona fide movie makers have made Karna hero, Duryodhan hero, Shakuni as the right person. Shakuni has the main role there. When Shakuni comes, audience get excited. They don't get disgusted. You see, you saw so many movies, Shakuni's character is highlighted like that. When Narada Muni comes, people have a different message. I'm speaking about some movies. Narada Muni comes on the screen and people have, hey, this fellow has come and he will do something, some gadbid. So that's how all these non-bona fide fellows have commented our wonderful characters of beautiful pure devotees. Pure devotees are portrayed in a negative way, and negative characters like Kichaka, Duryodhan and all these fellows are portrayed. Karna, they are portrayed in a positive way. They have been made heroes. And then the bona fide commentators, they kept quiet. They did not create any agitation. Although so much of misinterpretation of Mahabharata, Ramayana is happening, all the bona fide people who have knowledge kept quiet. So the satisfaction of the heart just went away. All this is taken over by these wrong people. Now people, till now also, so many people think that Karna is the hero of Mahabharata, not Arjun. And Krishna is a politician. That is the understanding of so many people. Right? Have you ever seen? People even blame Ram also. There were some books and movies that portrayed Ram also have done some mistakes. And Ravan has done some glorious deeds. Like that. This is all because bona fide commentators kept quiet and misinterpretators, they became very prominent. like that, like these roads. So we have to preserve the road. We have to walk on the road. We have to use that road. Otherwise that road will be blocked. If you don't use the road will be blocked. If you don't study the bona fide commentaries, that knowledge is lost. Someone has to come and revive it. Then to revive it, it will take lot of time. So much of energy is invested by the acharyas to give us these bona fide commentaries. And if you don't study them, if you speculate and if you follow someone else, okay, let me gather some masala. Acharya can report both. It's like too much to understand, man. Right? I have to keep my audience excited. Let me get some online jokes to make it more exciting. That has some purpose. When some people are doing it for certain purpose to give this Krishna conscious knowledge to certain audience in a certain way, that is, we have nothing against it. But what I am saying is, the point that I am emphasizing is, just like the roads are blocked and become invisible and inaccessible when they are not used, similarly, if we don't study the bona fide commentaries of acharyas, they will become inaccessible to us. And if one generation doesn't study, that will create a gap from the previous generation to the next generation. Right? Then who will fill the gap? And the next generation tries to figure out what this acharya is saying. Because they have not heard it from the previous, their fathers or forefathers, whatever, the immediate next generation, they didn't hear. There is a lot of gap. To fulfill that gap, even if they are bona fide and sincere seekers of knowledge, still because of the gap created by this generation, they are unable to access it. And if they cannot do a good job, the next generation is gone. If they are able to do some good job, then the next generation will get something. So the bona fide knowledge has to continue in parampara. If there is a break in parampara, then the knowledge is lost. Someone has to come and then revive this knowledge, and the Lord has to come as an incarnation, or he has to send his empowered representative to re-establish it. And if the followers of that acharya doesn't follow it properly, then it's gone. Then again, Krishna has to trouble it. Take the trouble of sending someone or coming back again. We should take advantage of what Krishna has already given us, right? Without troubling him. To come down again as an incarnation and then give this knowledge again. It's good. If Krishna comes again, that's ecstatic definitely. But why trouble him? Why not study why not utilize what he has already given us? That's the point. Which verse? Next verse. 17th verse.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, I had a question. Isn't it bypassing Srila Prabhupada if we are reading authorities, the commentaries of previous
authors? That is your open book exam question. You are asking me. you have not attended that question?
Neither I haven't.
Prabhupada writes in first canto, first chapter, first verse, purport.
Prabhupada writes,
a serious student will do well in studying the commentaries of previous acharyas, like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Vallabhacharya. Like that he mentions a few acharyas' names, Sridhara Swami. So it is not wrong to study previous acharyas' commentaries. It's not like bypassing Prabhupada. But if you keep Prabhupada aside and then just directly access it, what will happen is, you will not digest it. Access them through Prabhupada's purports. Prabhupada's purports ho gaya? After you study Prabhupada's purports, then you go to previous acharyas' purports. Or you study those purports along with Prabhupada's, not by keeping Prabhupada aside. It is said that someone's digestion capacity is poor, he can eat polished rice. If he directly eats organic rice, he cannot digest. Right? So first he should eat polished rice and then try to digest whatever he has eaten. Then slowly he can come to semi-polished rice, partially polished rice, and gradually he can come to unpolished rice and then eat it and digest it and assimilate it and get energy from it. For us to get energy and nourishment from some high source, first we have to equip ourselves with someone who is more closer to us, more recent to us, who is speaking in a language more understandable to us. Can you read Sanskrit? No, Prabhupada has translated Sanskrit commentaries into English. Let's read English first. Then we'll go to Sanskrit commentaries. Right? Like that. So it's not wrong to read previous acharya's commentaries. At the same time, you can't directly jump to previous acharya's commentaries by not studying Prabhupada. study Prabhupada, additional is that. Right? After you studied Prabhupada, you study previous acharyas also. Right? Like that. 17th verse. Lokabandhushu megheshu vidyutas chala sauhrudah sthairyam na chakruh kaminyah purusheshu gunishu va.
Though the clouds are the well-wishing friends of all living beings, the lightning, fickle in its affinities, moved from one group of clouds to another, like lusty women, unfaithful even to virtuous men.
See, clouds are like qualified men. They are well-wishing friends of all. Why? Because they are giving us rain. Just now it gave so much rain. We are unable to hear each other also. That is their well-wishers. So unscrupulous people will see that as a disturbance. Right, as the wealthy people who get disturbed by rain, but farmer gets ecstatic, so like that. But there is a comparison here between clouds and lightning. So clouds are like qualified men who are well-wishing people, give sustenance to many people. But this fickle lightning is there, it moves from one cloud to another cloud. Right, one cloud to another cloud. So that is compared to all these prostitutes. Right, they go from one man to another man. Where is this comparison? Fifth canto, senior batch. Fifth canto. Patyur jayeva pumschali. What is that? Kamo manjur mado lobho. Huh? In what context does it come? Rishabhadeva and mind. Why he did not accept mystic powers? So in that context, this word, this verse comes. Can someone read the entire verse? So the meaning of the verse is, if just mind, one cannot trust the mind. Right? There are three verses there in the fifth canto beginning. So their mind is like unchaste, right? Unchaste woman who changes paramours, right? Who changes husbands, or who changes who goes from one man to another man. So similarly, if one trusts the mind, it will give way to so many anarthas, because it has so many husbands. Kamo manyur
nityam dadati kamasya.
Nityam dadati kamasya. Next verse.
Kamo manyur madalobo.
Kamo manyur madalobo.
Shoka moha
bhayadaya.
Karma bandhascha yanmoolam.
Karma bandhascha yanmoolam.
Svikuryat konu tadbuddha.
Svikuryat konu tadbuddha. Which intelligent man will accept this mind that is giving way to these six enemies to the yogi? Next verse, Prabhu. Patyur jayeva pumsali, where does it come?
Nityam dadati kamasya chidram tamanu yereha yoginaha krita maitrasya patyur jayeva.
Yoginaha krita maitrasya patyur jayeva pumsali. So yogi should not make maitri, friendship with the mind, because it is like a pumsali, right? A prostitute that goes from one man to another man. Like that. So mind should not be trusted. And here it is compared to lightning. Lightning goes from one cloud to another cloud. Like that.
So, Krishna, there is a small inquiry. Like you said that yogi should not make friendship with the mind. But in case when we do day-to-day introspection, sometimes we identify with mind itself. So how to make that detachment itself with the mind and seeing that as a third person? Because when we start doing that, it's like some kind of psychological thing. Psychologically, it's not so normal in that sense to always see mind as a different thing. And at the same time, Krishna says that if we train a mind, it can be a best friend also. So while practicing for some years of time, how we distinguish that it is friend or it is like giving a wrong suggestions?
So one has to sharpen one's intelligence to observe the functionings of the mind. So in that body chariot analogy, the senses are there, horses, they are controlled by the reins, that is mind, And who is controlling the reins? The person who is sitting, driver. Who is that? Intelligence. So one has to sharpen one's intelligence by studying Shastra regularly. Then he will be able to understand the functionings of the mind. So we can understand the functionings of the mind to the extent we are intelligent. To the extent we sharpen our intelligence by bona fide sources. But we cannot understand the functionings of our false ego. Because false ego is subtler than the mind. Subtler than the intelligence also. Right? So mind is here, intelligence is above the mind, and false ego is above the intelligence. So intelligence can understand the functionings of something which is below it, mind, but not above it, false ego. So to understand the functionings of false ego, which are always above our intelligence, we need an intelligence which is superior to our false ego also. That is Guru's intelligence. Guru's intelligence is superior to our false ego. Our intelligence is always less than our false ego. Getting right? This is also intelligence, that is also intelligence. His intelligence is more spiritual than my intelligence, which is always subordinate to my false ego. Right? So one has to take shelter of a superior person, right? A senior Vaishnava, to understand the functionings of our false ego. And see, Prabhu, this is how I'm thinking, I'm feeling. So, or no, please suggest some solution like that. So with and sometimes we cannot distinguish whether it is the inner calling or whatever is coming from within, whatever sound coming from within, is it coming from mind or ego? Our intelligence cannot understand which is above me, which is below me. Intelligence sometimes might get confused. Then you always reconfirm with, some are quite straightforward. You can easily understand, my mind is going here, not here. If this is the right path, sometimes mind may go like this. So our intelligence can easily make out. At least those things we can take advantage of our intelligence, currently sharpened intelligence, and then control the mind, try to control the mind. Some things which are beyond, we are unable to figure out. Our intelligence is unable to figure out. Probably they are of the false ego. Ask someone. Ask someone who is more intelligent than you. 18th verse or 17th verse? 17th verse, we are in this fickle thing, right? So lusty woman, unfaithful to virtuous men, like that. Okay, there is a lesson to householders, you can study there. The 19th verse, I think we should take a break. Where? We'll take break after 15 minutes, okay? 11 o'clock we'll take. After 10 minutes we'll take break. 18th verse. Dhanurviyati mahendram nirgunam cha gunainyabhut vyakte gunavyatikare gunavan purusho yatha.
When the curved bow of Indra, the rainbow, appeared in the sky, which had the quality of thundering sound, it was unlike ordinary bows, because it did not rest upon a string. Similarly, when the Supreme Lord appears in this world, which is the interaction of the material qualities, he is unlike ordinary persons, because he remains free from all material qualities and independent of all material conditions.
Sometimes we see a bow, a rainbow. It is also called bow, but it doesn't have a string. Some quiz you can have. Which is that bow that doesn't have a string? That is rainbow. Right? Oh, praise. Claps and then praise to him. So, similarly, so many living entities appear in this world, take birth and die in this world. But Lord also appears and disappears from this world. That is not compared to a living entity's entrance or going out of this world. So living entity is forced by the material nature to take birth and die. But Lord, out of his own supreme will, by dint of his internal potency, yoga maya, he appears or disappears. In the third canto, in one purport, Prabhupada writes, he compares Krishna's appearance and disappearances to sun's appearance and sunset. So sun appears, right? And when At the end of the day, when sun disappears, sun sets, that doesn't mean sun died. Sun is appearing in some other hemisphere. Similarly, when Krishna disappears, he appears in a different planet, different universe. And sun will come back after 12 hours. At the end of the night, sun will come back. Similarly, Krishna also will come back in another day of Brahma within this universe also. Right? And if sun disappears, we are getting affected, but sun is not getting affected. Right? When sun disappears, there is night and thieves will become prominent. Right? And so much of disturbance might happen. One will not be able to see, he has to switch on lights, electricity bills may increase. So many things will happen because of sun's absence. Similarly, in Krishna's absence also, so many unwanted things may happen. But sun is not affected because of his disappearance. Similarly, Krishna is not affected. But devotees lament because of separation from Krishna, like that. Similarly, Krishna's appearance is like appearance of a rainbow. Our appearance, or birth or death, is like a normal bow with a string. So this is a bow without a string. So that is mentioned. That is 18th verse. No, 19th verse. Naraja jodupas channaha svajotsna rajitair ganaihi ghanaihi ahammatya bhasitasya svabhasa purusho yatha.
During the rainy season, the moon was prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the clouds, which were themselves illumined by the moon's rays. Similarly, the living being in material existence is prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the false ego, which is itself illumined by the consciousness of the pure soul.
So moon is covered by clouds. Similarly, living entities are covered by false ego. Our moon-like consciousness, which is actually supposed to make an offering to Krishna out of love and affection, supposed to eternally serve Krishna, is covered by false ego. Now, and we are thinking we are these bodies. We are thinking all these bodily relatives and possessions are mine, I and mine, aham mameti conception, all because of this cloud of false ego. If that cloud is gone, our moon-like consciousness will come again and becomes offerable to Krishna. Right? So, living entities are covered by false ego, just like moon is covered by clouds. So, but those clouds only are illuminated by moon's rays. So false ego is illuminated by the consciousness of soul, which is always pure. Right? So, unless the soul has consciousness, it cannot act through the subtle body. False ego or mind or intelligence. So all these are, the subtle body is functioning because soul has consciousness. That's what is mentioned here. So clouds are there, they also get illuminated because in the background there is moon. So cloud is coming like this, but behind there is a moon. If there is no moon there, cloud becomes dark only. If the moon is here behind the cloud, then it also, you know, reflects some illumination like that. So all the subtle body is acting. This gross body, right, which is just made of gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, that is animating because of the presence of the soul. Right? So because just like moon is the background of the illumination of clouds, soul is the background of the functioning of subtle and gross bodies. So one has to remove this cloud to see the moon, pure consciousness of the soul, behind these subtle and gross coverings. Similarly, one has to remove this, that's what I said, one has to remove this false ego to see the pure consciousness of the soul, which is eternal servant of Krishna. So as I was saying sometime back for someone's question here, that is, removing that false ego requires surrendering to a spiritual authority. That is very much needed. Because his intelligence is more spiritual than our intelligence. With our intelligence, however much you sharpen, you can't understand the functioning of false ego so much. Right? Even Narada Muni, even Vyasadeva, so he was despondent. So his spiritual master, Narada Muni, has to come there and tell him, so this is your problem. He has to chastise him. So then he came back to his good intelligence. His intelligence has become mature. And he compiled Bhagavatam. So our Vyasadeva compiled Bhagavatam at the maturity of his knowledge. And how did that maturity come? By the training and counseling of Narada Muni. So without the training and counseling of spiritual master, which person will advance? Which person's intelligence will become sharp? Right? Which person's thought process will become mature? It's all happening only because of the grace of some spiritual authority. So one should, that emphasizes the need for a spiritual authority in one's life. Because Krishna comes through the medium of transparent spiritual disciplic succession. Kasmayena vibhasito yamatulo jnana pradipah pura tadrupena cha naradaya munaye krishnaya tadrupina yogindraya tatatmanatha bhagavat radaya karunyatas tat shuddham vimalam vishokam amritam satyam param dhimahi. This is one of the last verses of Bhagavatam. So this verse says, kasmayena vibhasitoyam atulo jnana pradipah pura. So in Pura, in the beginning of the creation, Krishna enlightened Brahma with this transcendental knowledge. Tadrupena cha naradaya. In the form of Brahma, Krishna has enlightened Narada Muni. Krishnaya tadrupina, in the form of Narada Muni, he has enlightened Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa. And in the form of Vyasadeva, he has trained Sukadeva Goswami. And in the form of Sukadeva Goswami, Krishna has spoken this Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj. So whether Krishna is speaking, or Brahma is speaking, or Narada is speaking, or Vyasa is speaking, or Sukadeva Goswami is speaking, it is Krishna only speaking. So Krishna is speaking through the transparent via medium of Guru Parampara. If one gets connected to that parampara, he has the opportunity to remove these clouds of false ego and reveal one's pure consciousness of being eternal servant of Krishna. Right? So connection to parampara is the key for success in spiritual life. If one is disconnected for parampara, he goes, kidhar jayega? If the kite gets disconnected from the thread, where will it end up? Will it come back to this house? Right, it will not come. Where it will go, no one knows. So it has to be connected. For example, Trinavarta took Krishna 800,000 miles away in the sky. So what is the, and there is no thread connecting Trinavarta kite to Vrindavan. So when Krishna fell, when Trinavarta fell, he fell right in Vrindavan only. Right next to all the mothers who are crying. What is the possibility that someone went which is 800,000 miles away high, what is the possibility that it will come back and fall at the same place from where he flew? Hardly any possibility. But it happened because of Krishna's grace. But it doesn't happen with ordinary kites. Ordinary kites have to be connected with a rope for them to come back safely from to their, you know, source, home. So that rope is the parampara. So one has to be connected with the parampara. Otherwise, we are flying like a threadless kite here and there. Now it's 11 o'clock. We'll discuss the rest of the chapter after a short break. Then we'll discuss for an hour or so. Then you will discuss. Right? So in this break, I request Amit Patel Prabhu and Nitai Chaitanya Prabhu to form groups. And one more. You are from Gopinath group, right? One representative from Govinda group should come. They are the boss. So three of you. Govinda, Gopinath, Madan Mohan. So each group should contain a mixture of all these, you know, three groups. One senior devotee and one, you know, Bhakti Shastri batch person and one non-Bhakti Shastri batch person. All three should be there within the group. Right? Hare Krishna. Eight people in a group. Chale, good. Hare Krishna. So which verse? Number 19. 19 is done. Actually in the 19th verse, Prabhupada writes so many points about the false ego. The role of false ego with our material consciousness, all that is explained. So the senior batch devotees can study on their own. Now 20th verse.
Meghagamotsavahrishtah Pratyanandan Chikindita Chikandinah Griheshu Tapta Nirvinna Yathachyuta Janagame.
The peacocks became festive and cried out a joyful greeting when they saw the clouds arrive. Just as people distressed in household life feel pleasure when the pure devotees of the infallible Supreme Lord visit them.
So this is another beautiful analogy. So peacock gets ecstatic, very excited, seeing rain. So when rain comes, peacock just opens its feathers and then it gives a very beautiful darshan. Of our peacock fan we do, right? Bigger than that. Big darshan. Otherwise you don't see much darshan. So similarly, householders also become very joyful to receive a devotee at their house. So in the 8th chapter of 10th canto, we have Gargacharya who came to Nanda Maharaj's house. So Nanda Maharaj said, Mahadvijaranam runam ghrinam dina chetasam Nishreyasaya Bhagavan kalpate nanyatha kochit. Right? So Mahadvijaranam runam. The purpose of the travelings of pure devotees is especially to householders' houses is to deliver them, not for any other purpose. They don't come to just flatter the householders so that they give some charity to them, so that he can live at the cost of householders. That is not the purpose. That should not be the purpose. And also, the householder goes, only the sadhu goes to a householder's house only to give him spiritual knowledge. This example of Sukadeva Goswami is mentioned. He would go to a house and stays at that house only for the milking time of a cow. All of you are staying at Goshala. How much time does it take to milk a cow? Half an hour. Only half an hour a sadhu stays at someone's house. That too, when Sukadeva Goswami goes and stays, he reflects on Krishna's Gocharan Leelas, etc. while the cow milking is going on. Right? He is in his ecstasy of absorbing in Krishna Leela, and he goes there to make the householder also absorb in Krishna Leela. That is the only purpose, no other purpose. Right? So that's what it says. Just like peacocks become joyful, householders become joyful. So householder becomes joyful. So one reason is they got an opportunity to receive such an exalted personality at their house, to get some knowledge from him. Sometimes some householders may want to transfer some karma also to the sadhu, right, by giving him something like that. Unless the sadhu doesn't have the potency to devour all that karma and still not get affected, he should not often visit householder's house. Prabhupada may go to so many donors and then eat whatever they feed, and all that Prabhupada can do, because Prabhupada is very potent. Right, Prabhupada can absorb all that and still get unaffected. So it is said that in the 24 Gurus episode only, this analogy comes. Devotee is like fire. Just like in fire, in a yajnik fire, you just pour oblations after oblations. Right? So fire can devour all that. You 1 liter ghee dala, 1 more liter if you put, will fire not accept it or what? It can accept. It has the capacity to do burn all of it. Similarly, devotee, an advanced devotee, also has the capacity to take the karma of different people. A spiritual master has the capacity. Advanced devotee has the capacity to, take the karmic reaction of other people and then still not get affected themselves and be beneficial to other people also. Right? And they can eat also. Eat foodstuffs at different places and still not get affected by it. When someone cooks something and then feeds, right? If that person, the person who is cooking, is not in proper consciousness, that cooking will affect us. Someone takes something in hotel and that fellow is just smoking cigarette and then making dosa and then feeding, right? Making pizza or something and then feeding us. If one eats that, that's little, not little, it's quite affecting one's consciousness, right? That might affect. So One has to be very careful in accepting favors from householders. On the other side, householder has to be very eager to receive a sadhu at his house and then serve him. By that he will advance spiritually. So for him it is whatever, amrit, nectar or something. For sadhu who is not very advanced, it could be poison also. So one has to strike a balance somewhere. Maybe occasional visits only, not regular visits. That kind of adjustment one has to make to protect oneself, still assist others in their spiritual advancement, like that. Next verse, 22, right? 21. Pitva pah padapa padbhir asannana atma murtayah prakshamastapasasha shranta yatha kama anusevaya.
The trees had grown thin and dry, but after they drank the newly fallen rainwater through their feet, their various body features blossomed. Similarly, one whose body has grown thin and weak from austerity again exhibits his healthy bodily features upon enjoying the material objects gained through that austerity.
So padapa pitva apaha padapaha padbhir. Padapaha means, apa means, you know, accepting, drinking, right? So pitva means having drunk, apa is water. So padapaha means through pada they accept water, means roots. You water the root, right? Yatha taror mola nishechanena tripyanti tatskanda bhujo apashakaha. So trees drink water through their roots. So there are different kinds of living entities that accept nourishment through different ways. So this is like vertical nourishment from bottom to top. Trees take from bottom to top. Man will take from top to bottom. Animal will take from left to right or right to left. Right? So there are different ways of ways in which living entities get nourished. So these are padapaha. So before monsoon, trees grew thin and dry, like body grown thin because of austerity. Right? When someone does austerity, it becomes very lean, patla ho jayega, right? So all his chubby cheeks will go inside. So that is the effect of one's austerity. Similarly, trees also have grown very thin. But in monsoon, they have become very lush green like this. You see, the previous tree is this. This is on top of Kohoz, I think. And this is in monsoon. They become very green and then nourished. So they are getting lot of apa for their padapa, for drinking water. So they become very happy. So it's like one upon enjoying the material objects gained through that austerity. One does austerity and then if he gets some results of their austerities, they'll feel very happy. Right? Similarly, trees getting dried up in summer is considered their austerity, and they are getting water in monsoon is considered result of their austerity, like that. Next, 22. Earth also became emaciated because of summer heat. 22nd.
Sarasvashantarodhashu Nyushur Anga Pisarasaha Gruheshvashanta Krityeshu Gramya Ivadurashayaha
Gramya Ivadurashayaha.
The cranes continued dwelling on the shores of the lakes, although the shores were agitated during the rainy season. Just as materialistic persons with contaminated minds always remain at home despite the many disturbances there.
This image also is corresponding to the previous analogy only. So just like trees, various bodily features get blossomed, the person who does austerity, his healthy bodily features also will manifest. Just like Hiranyakashipu got his body back again, and he became very stout and strong, like a thunderbolt. All his thin, emaciated body was gone. Same thing here. So now about this verse, we have cranes at the shores of agitated lakes. So they are compared to materialistic people who are at home despite all disturbances. So although the home is giving so much of trouble and all, it's very difficult for a householder who is very attached to all the possessions, his property, his wealth, etc. He cannot leave it. We have great Rajarshis in the Bhagavatam that are described. Uttanapada. Uttanapada left as soon as Dhruva became, eligible to accept the throne. Uttanapada just left. I think even before his marriage he left. Then we have Manu, Swayambhu Manu. So he left. He was very eager for renouncing. So he convinced Priyavrata to accept the kingdom through Brahmaji's medium, and then he left. And then Priyavrata also left after ruling for some time, and then he got some 7 sons, and then he left. So like that, there are so many. Prachetas left. Then Prachinabhari, he left after getting trained by Narada Muni. So like that, there are so many Rajarshis who just left it. But materialistic attached householders, they don't leave their home till the fag end of their life. Only death will check them out of their homes. Right? So no material situation, in spite of so many troubles, they are not at all developing any eagerness to leave their comfortable, so-called comfortable material household life. They are compared to cranes that stick to some water reservoirs and then be there only. Okay, that is 22nd verse. Now 23rd verse.
Jalaughair nirabhidyanta setavo varshatishvare pashandinam asadvadir vedamargah kalau yatham.
When Indra sent forth his rains, the flood waters broke through the irrigation dikes in the agricultural fields. Just as in the Kali Yuga, the atheist's false theories break down the boundaries of Vedic injunctions.
So, flood waters broke through the irrigation dikes in the agricultural fields. So much rain is there. Now he is nicely doing the tilling part. Now there is so much water, if that whole thing fills up and then it goes beyond the boundaries and then flows on the road also. That happens in the floods. Right? So that is compared to atheistic false theories breaking the boundaries of Vedic injunctions. So one should, a bona fide follower of a bona fide sampradaya should not allow those atheistic doctrines to cross beyond the boundaries. First, they should not allow them to sprung up only. Somehow they came up because of sleeping. Watchmen are sleeping. Watchman is sleeping, treasure is stolen by thieves. Something similar is happening here. So one should not allow them to flourish, allow the atheistic philosophies to flourish. One has to protect the humanity from the atheistic philosophies. That needs a lot of maturity and spiritual advancement. And we ourselves may not be able to do it. So we should assist our acharyas in doing it. Right? We should do our part like that. Next, out of one's initial enthusiasm, one may jump and I will fight all this, I will fight with these missionaries, right? I will do this, I will do that. Then one may also get converted also. If he's not sufficiently advanced himself, right? One has to nourish himself before jumping into the battlefield. Like that. Otherwise he will not come back from the battle only. So 24.
Vyamanchan vayubhirnunna bhutebhyasyamritam ghanah yathashisho vishpatayah kale kale dvijeritah.
The clouds, impelled by the winds, released their nectar in water for the benefit of all living beings, just as kings instructed by their Brahmana priests dispense charity to the citizens.
So clouds impelled by winds released nectarian water for everybody. So now birds also become very happy. Right? Kings inspired by Brahmanas dispense charity and perform sacrifices. This is similar to the initial analogies that we have seen. Sun evaporates water and then gives it back like that. So king also does so many sacrifices. Right? So these are the wonderful features of monsoon compared to so many other application-oriented phenomena. natural phenomena is giving us so many practical lessons. This is how Sukadeva Goswami took us through the description of monsoon in Vrindavan. Next he will describe autumn in Vrindavan. So autumn is Sharad Ritu. So before describing the Krishna's conjugal pastimes of Sharad, he describes the season slightly, right? So we will discuss from which verse? 25, right? Till 24 is done. Now we will discuss 25. Evam vanam tadva varshishtam pakvakharjura jambubhat gogopalairvritorantum sabalah pravishadharihi.
When the Vrindavan forest had thus become resplendent, filled with ripe dates and jambu fruits, Lord Krishna, surrounded by his cows and cowherd boyfriends and accompanied by Sri Balaram, entered that forest to enjoy.
So, actually he begins describing autumn from 32nd verse onwards, 32, 33 onwards. So, in the next 3-4 verses, 5-6 verses, he describes how Krishna and Balaram and all the gopas enjoyed in this monsoon of Vrindavan. Right? So after describing monsoon, he will describe very briefly the pastimes of monsoon. Then after describing autumn, he will describe the pastimes of autumn. That's how Sukadeva Goswami takes us through Bhagavatam. Next, 26th translation, read. The cows have to move slowly
because of their weighty milk bags, but they quickly ran to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he called them, their affection for him causing their udders to become wet.
So, because all the cows are also having motherly affection for Krishna, they are also in Vatsalya Rasa with Krishna. In Brahma Vimohan Leela, Krishna reciprocated with these cows also. So, when Krishna calls them, each and every cow hears its own name. What is the possibility that you just utter one name and then different people hear different names, their own names? Krishna can do it, especially when there are 9 lakh cows. All the 9 lakh cows or more or whatever, all of them will hear Krishna speaking their name only. So there are different pastimes where Krishna has displayed such wonderful affection towards all these cows. Brahma Vimohan Leela is one. Then Gopashtami. What is that? Krishna doesn't wear chappal, right? So cows will powder all the pebbles and stones in Vrindavan, make them into powder, right? So these are different reciprocation between Krishna and the cows. Next.
The Lord saw the joyful aboriginal girls of the forest, the trees dripping sweet sap, and the mountain waterfalls whose resounding indicated that there were caves nearby.
Okay. Aboriginal girls of the forest, they also have access to Krishna's beautiful footprints. So even in the next chapter, all the gopis who were singing this Venu Gita, Krishna's flute song, right? So all the gopis also appreciate these aboriginal girls for their fortune of seeing Krishna in the forest. And we are so unfortunate, these aboriginal girls are seeing Krishna and Balaram there and all the cowherd boys there in the forest. We are staying in our houses only, we are unable to see Krishna Balaram's pastimes like that. Next.
When it rained, the Lord would sometimes enter a cave or the hollow of a tree to play and to eat roots and fruits.
So Krishna eats fruits and roots. So during the rainy season, bulbs and roots are very tender and palatable. So Krishna would eat them along with wild fruits found in the forest. Right? Krishna's stomach doesn't get upset by eating. If we go for a trekking and then take something and then eat, then we may have dysentery or something like that. But Krishna, Balaram, they can eat all kinds of fruits and roots available in the forest. Next, 29.
Lord Krishna would take his meal of boiled rice and yogurt sent from home in the company of Lord Sankarsana and the cowherd boys who regularly ate with him. They would all sit down to eat on a large stone near the water.
Next.
Next, you can read.
Lord Krishna watched the contented bulls, cows and the cows sitting on the green grass and grazing with closed eyes, and he saw that the cows were tired from the burden of their heavy milk bags. Thus observing the beauty and opulence of Vrindavan's rainy season, a perennial source of great happiness, the Lord offered all respect to that season, which was expanded from his own internal potency.
So when this season, monsoon season, is appearing in Vrindavan, that is an expansion of Krishna's internal potency. It doesn't happen because of this material nature. The nature of this material world is that there are seasons, right? One season after another season. All this appear as a part of this material nature only. Nature is manifesting different seasons. But in Vrindavan, all seasons are also manifesting for Krishna's pleasure. That is an action of Krishna's internal potency. All the cows and calves and deer and birds and so many other animals in Vrindavan, they are existing for the pleasure of Krishna. All the rivers and water bodies, they are existing for the pleasure of Krishna. All the trees and leaves and fruits, all of them are existing for the pleasure of Krishna. So every element in Vrindavan, entire Vrindavan, is meant to give Krishna pleasure only. In the next chapter also we will learn more in the Venu Gita. How everybody is worshipping Krishna, is serving Krishna, is having reciprocation with Krishna. That is Vrindavan. So Vrindavan is filled with that simplicity of heart. All simple things are happening in Vrindavan. So Vrindavan is not having some complicated structures like in Dwaraka or Maya, Sabha, this or that. So many complicated things will not happen in Vrindavan. And people's dealings are so friendly and simple, so down to earth. The boy will go into someone's house and then steal some butter and then eat. It's not a very big thing, right? It's not so complicated. Simple thing. And then grazing cows and calves and then going inside the forest and then eating fruits, bulbs, and then playing some simple games, not even cricket, football also, right? Playing simple games like hide and seek, and imitating frogs, imitating birds, imitating other reptiles, right? Imitating monkeys, playing with monkeys, and then teasing other gopis and gopas, having some fighting with each other. So all this you will see right here also. Right? Some children are playing, what they are doing, that's what is happening in Vrindavan also. But that, all those activities are manifested by Krishna's internal potency. So because of our complicated brains, we are unable to appreciate the simple activities of Vrindavan. You see this Garbhagriha, the top layer has so many activities, so much of opulence of Krishna. The bottom layer, smaller layer, which has only Vrindavan episode, tenth canto, first chapter till 37th chapter, the Vrindavan Leela, you will see all simple episodes, right? Krishna just playing with gopas, and then Mother Yashoda binding him, right, doing some abhishek. All the simple activities are there. And even when demons come and Krishna kill those demons also, they are like small breaks and interruptions once in a while. Lunch break, right, before lunch some demon comes. That also is arranged by Krishna's internal potency only. Some demon comes and causes some disturbance so that these boys will come out of their play and then kill that fellow and they say, hey, we are feeling hungry, I think. So let's have some prasad. Then they will have prasad. The demon killing Leela is just Krishna kills him like this. Right? Just few minutes job. Whole day they are playing only. Their entire day is filled with playing. And demon killing is few minutes job for him. Like that. What we can relate to is demon killing because of so much of opulence and majesty exhibited there. And that too, even Krishna kills demons in Vrindavan also, that is majorly, he doesn't change his form. He doesn't exhibit, so many features or weapons, etc. Keshi, he just puts his hand inside Keshi's mouth and then he is killed. Vatsasura, he just turns him around and then he is killed. Bakasura, he just opens his beak. All childish way of killing. Right? Not a very warrior way of killing. Like so many astras and shooting and then some gada taking and the big club fighting. Nothing like that will happen. Just like child, what he does with, like that only with the demons also. Right? except only Aghasur Krishna Jay kind of expanded because there is no one around to see him. Otherwise all simple activities. Vrindavan means simplicity. Simplicity of hearts, simplicity of acts, activities, simplicity of dealings. That is Vrindavan. So all this monsoon, they are just enjoying. All our Gurukul children, they just play in rain, right, in the evening. That's what all these gopas are also doing. It's all simple. It's not city life, it's village life, forest life. So now we'll see the autumn season in Vrindavan. Number 33. Read the translation. 32.
While Lord Ram and Lord Kesha were thus dwelling in Vrindavan, the fall season arrived. When the sky is cloudless, the water clear and the wind gentle.
Next.
The autumn season, which regenerated the lotus flowers, also restored the various bodies of water to their original purity. Just as the process of devotional service purifies the minds of the fallen yogis when they return to it.
See? So, all the lotuses, lilies, whatever, they are regenerated and restored various water bodies to their full purity. See, in monsoon, all the water bodies become very muddy. There's so much of mud there. You see, our Yamuna has become brown. Earlier it was like transparent. Now it has become brown. So in autumn, again it will become transparent. Like that is the nature of autumn season. And all the water bodies will just come up. Lilies will come up. Right? So this is compared to bhakti. How bhakti purifies the mind of fallen yogis when they return to it. Somebody is practicing bhakti. And because of certain circumstances or previous habits or some other situations, he fell down. And because of some devotee's mercy or some other reasons, he will come back to the process of bhakti. How will he feel? He'll feel very happy, right? So, I went away from the path of Krishna consciousness for a while and I'm happy to get reconnected to the path again. Same thing is here. All the muddy water reservoirs, they have become muddy in monsoon and in autumn, they restored their purity again. They have become pure. All the water lilies and lotuses came up again. So, pravishta karna randhrena svanam bhava saroruhum dhunoti samalam krishna salilasya yathasarat. So, in the sarat season, all the water bodies become very pure. In the second canto, you will learn this verse. Right? In the second canto, this verse comes. Dhunoti samalam krishna. So, mind is just like in autumnal rains. Now, this monsoon rains will make it muddy. Autumnal rains will clean the water, right, will make it, there very slight drizzling happens and water will become pure. That's how it is said. Similarly, when we hear Krishna Katha, our contaminated hearts will become pure, right. So, that is how bhakti purifies. Next, 34th verse.
Autumn cleared the sky of clouds, let the animals get out of their crowded living conditions, cleaned the earth of its covering of mud and purified the water of contamination. In the same way that loving service rendered to Lord Krishna frees the members of the four spiritual orders from their respective troubles.
See, this is a little elaborate verse. So in autumn, the sky is cleared of clouds. Right? And this is compared to, these features of autumn are compared to devotional service, how it frees the four spiritual orders from troubles. So first brahmacharis, these brahmacharis. So the sky, in autumn the sky retains its original state, natural state. All the clouds, rain clouds will vanish, normal clouds will manifest. Now the sky becomes very clear. So it is compared to the vanquishing of troublesome duties in brahmachari life. Brahmachari has to do so many austerities, right? So, the austerities and a lot of troubles that brahmachari undergoes, they kind of diminish, right? They come down, so at certain level, right? So that is compared to skies returning to its original bluish color. Then in monsoon, animals cluster together. Now if you go to Goshala, you will see all the cows staying together, because when rain is coming, right? So they can't just go around on the grazing fields, right? They come together under some tree or some shed, and then they come closer. So householders, then in autumn they go to their respective places, right? So householders being free from harassment of family duties and giving more time to spiritual practices, that's how it is compared to, right? Householder, animals coming together, clustering together is compared to householders' absorption in household duties. Animals setting, going free to graze and other things, that is compared to householders focusing on spiritual practices. So they are grihasthas alone. I mean going at different places. Then vanaprasthas. So the muddy layer on the earth is removed in monsoon. In monsoon, muddy layer is formed on the earth. In autumn, it is removed, right? So that removal of muddy layer is compared to removal of inconveniences of vanaprastha life. Next, the water gets purified. The brown water will become more clear and transparent. So that is compared to the satisfaction of sannyasa life, right? By being without sex desire. Next, read the 35th verse.
The clouds, having given up all they possessed, shone forth with purified effulgence, just like peaceful sages who have given up all material desires and are thus free of all sinful propensities.
So clouds gave up everything. So now you see a dark monsoon cloud that is holding lot of water. It is seen very dark, right? So when the cloud gives up everything, it shines. It's whitish. It's very illuminating, very bright, right? It's not like a dark monsoon cloud. Dark monsoon cloud is the color of Krishna, right? And a whitish normal cloud is the color of Balramji. So it becomes very shining, effulgent. So this is compared to peaceful sages who give up all material desires. When one is holding lot of material desires, he appears very gloomy, right? Very clumsy, cloudy. So when those desires are gone, he appears effulgent. Next.
During this season, the mountains sometimes released their pure water and sometimes did not. Just as experts in transcendental science sometimes give the nectar of transcendental knowledge and sometimes do not.
So in monsoon, there is almost constant water flow from the mountains. So much of water is there, it's falling off. But in autumn, occasional water flow is seen. Waterfalls are manifesting occasionally. So it is compared to preachers sometimes giving knowledge and sometimes don't. Why preachers sometimes give knowledge and sometimes don't? Because everything depends on time, place, circumstances. For example, Dhruv Maharaj said, I am a Kshatriya. I cannot accommodate all the instructions, moral instructions that you are giving, my dear Narada Muni. I want to attain a position which is superior to my great-grandfather Brahmaji also. Show me some honest path to achieve that goal. Then Narada Muni changes the strategy. He gave a combination of little Ashtanga Yoga and little Bhakti, Mantra meditation and deity worship. He just gave a combination and said, you practice it. Practice Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So like that, Narada Muni dovetailed Dhruv Maharaj's passion and determination in devotional service. And there are so many other incidents where preachers may not completely give Krishna consciousness to people, right, in a direct way, but they kind of slowly give, you know, maybe, okay, you chant with one round or you just do some meditation, you come for some stress management program, some bridging program, you come, and then later they will slowly introduce things, right? So everything depends on the circumstances. This is compared to waterfall, right? Mountains, sometimes there are some waterfalls in mountains in autumn season, sometimes they are not. So same thing is here. Everything depends on the circumstances, time, place, circumstances. Preachers giving knowledge. But preacher's intention is never to hide spiritual knowledge from common people. They will release as much as the people in general can digest. Right? Right on day one, a newborn baby, 1 or 2 days old, you start feeding rabdi, will he digest it? You feed him burfi, No, Rasik Gaurav Prabhu is making for you. Right, you feed him that heavy sweets. Will he digest? No. So you need to give him milk only, like that. Same thing here. And if circumstances are not very favorable, preacher may change his strategy. Preacher may change his place also. In Bengal, circumstances were not favorable for Mahaprabhu's preaching. He went to South India and started preaching. In India, circumstances were not favorable for Prabhupada to preach. He went to New York and started preaching. Right? So it is not wrong on the part of a preacher to change his place. Right? To seek a place which is more favorable for preaching. Like that. Idea is to spread Krishna consciousness and connect as many souls as possible to bhakti. Right? This fellow is not, for example, you are doing big distribution and one fellow got into so much argument, you are wasting your 1 hour, 2 hours on that one person only. Go to some other person, show the books to 100 people in this 1 hour, 2 hours, instead of trying to convince one person to take one small book of 10 rupees. Right? And after so much of argument, we are not sure whether he will read or not also. So try to show the books to so many people and then maybe trying to do more book distribution. So that is considered little more intelligent. Everything depends on circumstances. Sometimes one person is there, one big person is there, you may have to spend one full day, not just 1 hour, 2 hours, showing him the books. You may have to spend 1 hour, 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 days to get his appointment and then meet him for, you know, 10 minutes. Because that meeting of 10 minutes which is coming to you after 10 days would be very beneficial, highly beneficial for the entire, you know, process. Right? He may be a very favorable person, influential person, like that. And if you make that person favorable to Krishna consciousness, that is, that will connect so many other people also. Right? So when king is made a devotee, and all his followers also can become devotees. So that kind of thing. So everything depends on circumstances in which one can give Krishna consciousness to people. But speaker, preacher is not a conducive person who wants to hide spiritual knowledge. Next.
The fish swimming in the increasingly shallow water did not at all understand that the water was diminishing. Just as foolish family men cannot see how the time they have left to live is diminishing with every passing day.
This is a very important analogy. So in autumn, the water level starts decreasing. In monsoon, water level starts increasing. There is overflowing of ponds and even small rivulets also. But in autumn season, the water level starts decreasing. But the fish doesn't realize it. Fish inside the water think that, I will perpetually be in this water. I will continue to be in this water and enjoy my life till the end. So that's what fish will think. So in our childhood, we used to hear one story. That is, there are three fish. One fish name is Samayaspurti. Second fish is Praptakalagna. Then third fish is Mandamati. Mandamati or? I don't remember again. Mandamati, something to that effect. So, once some fishermen came to that pond and they planned, tomorrow we will come here, throw our nets and then capture all these fish and then sell them or eat them or do whatever. They were planning like that. So, one fish heard it and made an announcement. We have to save our lives. There is another big water reservoir, big lake connecting to this small pond. So we should escape through that pond and somehow reach that big lake, because in this pond some fishermen are coming and then trying to capture us. Right? We lose our lives, so we should do it. Then Samayaspurti, it got that announcement, it got that indication. Immediately through that small canal that is connecting from this pond to that lake, it escaped and then it saved his life. And then Praptakalagna, another fish, second, medium. Second fish thought, they will come tomorrow, right? It's not so soon. So I have still 24 hours to enjoy in these waters, in which I am enjoying for the last so many days or months, whatever. So I will be here. And it was there till the last moment, right? When the fisherman just gave the, put the fish net, with great difficulty it tried to somehow not touch that net, and then somehow at the end it just escaped. And there is another fish called Mandamati. It didn't pay any heed to any announcement or net or good advice of Samaya Spurti and all those, just was caught in fisherman's net and then gave up his life, had to give up his life. So these are the three kinds of fish we had in our childhood. So the fish, when it is ignorant, it cannot realize the diminishing water. When the water level diminishes, so fish cannot have any place to sustain its life. It has to die. Similarly, foolish family members, not every family member is foolish. This is speaking about people who are foolish. Family people who are foolish, like that. So some foolish householders, they cannot see the diminishing of their life. One example is Dhritarashtra. Tomorrow the junior batch will hear about Dhritarashtra. How Vidura just rips him apart with so much of chastisement. You are eating the remnants that are thrown away by Bhima like a watchdog. Right? You have inflicted so much pain and suffering on all these Pandavas, and now you are living at the cost of them. There is absolutely no use to live this kind of life. Right? Get out of this Hastinapur. Time has captured you. And Dhritarashtra might say, how can time has captured my forefathers but not me? He may say like that. First, Vidura said that time has overcome you, you have become old, your sight, the power of your sight has diminished, right? Your physical limbs have become very weak, right? See, death has overcome you, death is approaching you. And to give an example, he gave examples of so many of his forefathers who died. Then Dhritarashtra might say that, oh, my forefathers might have died. I will not die. He may say like that. Then he releases this. You are close to death. Your body is giving so much symptoms. Right? When you are coughing, so many ragas are coming out. All these are symptoms of old age. You are close to death. Right? So, like that, in various ways, he chastised Dhruva. Chastised Dhritarashtra. So that shows that people who are so attached to family life will not easily give up that position. Right? They are like fish. Fish in water reservoirs in autumn, not in monsoon. Like that. So, fish suffered the heat of autumn sun and slowly they had to give up their lives. Right? These are like misers absorbed in family life, suffer because of uncontrolled senses. So, till the last moment he is just utilizing his sensual power and energy and money just for sense gratification, not utilizing it for spiritual realization at all. So such a person is doomed, right? They are like fish in autumn season. Next, Prabhu.
Just as a miserly, poverty-stricken person overly absorbed in family life suffers because he cannot control his senses, the fish swimming in the shallow water had to suffer the heat of the autumn sun.
That we have discussed. Next.
Gradually, the different areas of land gave up their muddy condition and the plants grew past their unripe stage. In the same way that sober sages give up egotism and possessiveness. These are based on things different from the real self, namely the material body and its byproducts.
So land gave up its muddy condition and plants grew. Similarly, sober sages gave up their egoism and possessiveness. Land's giving up their muddy condition is compared to sober sages giving up their egoism and possessiveness. I and mine. That is compared to muddy state of land. So when so much of kichad is there on the land, you don't feel like stepping your foot on that land only. Right? You just escape and then bypass it and then go through some other path. Right? Similarly, ego and possessiveness, it's like kichad in our minds. Right? It's mud. Someone has to surpass that by surrendering to the process of hearing and chanting. And bending one's head in front of a spiritual authority. Jnane prayasa mudapasya namanta eva jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadiya varta. So, jnane prayasam. So, when Ramananda Rai was discussing, so many, actually Mahaprabhu asked him, what is the highest sadhya? Sadhya means the highest attainable goal of life. So, what is that? Then Ramananda replied, Varnashram. Mahaprabhu said, oh, Bahya. It cannot be the goal. You may practice it, that may be beneficial, but it cannot be the goal. So like that, he gave so many proposals. Right? First he said Swadharma Acharana, that is Varnashram. Then Swadharma Tyaga, giving up occupational duties. Then Jnana Mishra Bhakti, then Jnana Shunya Bhakti. So Jnana Shunya Bhakti is Jnana Prayasa Madhapasya. You learn more in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So as of now, you just take this much only. So Mahaprabhu was saying Eho Bahya, Eho Bahya, Eho Bahya for all the initial proposals. And he said Eho Haya, this is something. This is worth. What you have, this proposal is worth accepting. When he said that, when Mahaprabhu quoted this, when Ramanandare quoted this, Jnane Prayasam Udapasya verse. So Jnane Prayasam Udapasya means trying to give up one's personal endeavors to figure out things on his own. Jnana. I think this is best for me. I feel this is good for me. So this is my opinion. This is my plan for my advancement. So that is how a conditioned soul will think. Right? He is so obsessed with his own thoughts. Varnashram is also more or less that only. Varnashram means doing whatever I want to do. Doing whatever I like to do. Doing whatever I am good at doing. That is good initially. But when we are, that is definitely good for a civilized human life. Engaging oneself into one's, according to one's propensities and skill set, that is definitely good. But higher than that is keeping aside one's own likings and abilities and capacities and surrendering to the opinions of a higher spiritual authority. Right? So that is Jnane Prayasam Udapasya, giving up one's endeavor to cultivate, you know, knowledge and then trying to figure out things on one's own. Namanta eva jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadiya varta. One has to hear from a bona fide authority and mould his life according to the instructions given by that authority. Spiritual authority, bona fide authority, not anyone and everyone. Like that. One keeps aside his personal possessiveness and egoism and then plans and then surrenders himself to someone else's plan. That shows humility. That is humility. That means he is going beyond varnashram. If one is imbued with the thoughts that whatever I will do, whatever I want to do, then where is surrender? If one is thinking that I will do whatever I want to do, right? Then there is no surrender there. Surrender to a bona fide spiritual authority there. And if one is thinking that I will do whatever I can do, this is my capacity, that I will do whatever I can do, then one is not having faith on Krishna's mercy. Faith on the empowerment coming from a superior power. Getting right? If one thinks, I will do what I want to do, no surrender. I will do what I can do, then there is no faith on Krishna. Faith on a superior power. So, Varnashram is coming out of this comfort zone. Going beyond Varnashram means going beyond this comfort zone. That is Jnane Prayasam Udapasya. Then Mahaprabhu said, Eho Hai. This is what I accept. From this proposal onwards, he said, Jnana Shunya Bhakti. So giving up this possessiveness and egoism means giving up one's own plans, right, for one's goodness, one's welfare, and keeping one's welfare in the hands of a bona fide spiritual authority. Like that. So in the fourth canto, one beautiful analogy comes. This rivers. Our desires for sense gratification are like ripples on an ocean, on a river, which will never stop. Right? Ripples on a river will stop. Will they stop? Our desires for sense gratification are like that. And when the river meets the ocean, then the ripples of the river will become insignificant in comparison to the tides of the ocean. Similarly, when the soul meets a spiritual authority, spiritual master, and then follows the instructions of that spiritual master and assists him in his plans to serve Krishna, then his desires for sense gratification will fade away. The plans of a pure devotee will overwhelm our plans for sense gratification, and they will go in the background. These plans will come in the foreground, and one will advance spiritually. That is Jnane Prayasam Udapasya Namanta Eva. So giving up one's egoism and possessiveness means to surrender in front of a spiritual, superior spiritual master, authority. Giving up material master and surrendering to a spiritual master. That's what Prabhupada says. Next.
With the arrival of autumn, the ocean and the lakes become silent, their water still, just like a sage who has desisted from all material activities and given up his recitation of Vedic mantras.
Okay. So the lakes and oceans became silent, their water became still, calm, right? So in monsoon, lot of agitation in that water, lot of flow and then just going up and down. But in autumn, all these things are settled. Just like sages desist from material activities and gives up the recitation of ordinary Vedic mantras. Ordinary Vedic mantras. Earlier, frog croaking, Vedic mantra chanting is mentioned. Here, ordinary Vedic mantras are given up and then proper devotional mantras are being chanted. So when a sage is completely free of personal desire, he vibrates the transcendental glories of the Supreme Lord exclusively. Like that. So yogis bring senses under the strict control to check their consciousness from flowing out through the agitated senses. This is an important verse. Read, Prabhu.
In the same way that the practitioners of yoga bring their senses under strict control to check their consciousness from flowing out through the agitated senses, the farmers erected strong mud banks to keep the water within their rice fields from draining out.
So, now in monsoon, there is lot of water, right, coming into the fields. Sometime back we have discussed, right, the water will overflow the dikes, agricultural boundaries and then goes out. That was analogy, you remember? But in autumn, rain decreased, no rain. So water, there is a scarcity of water. So one has to preserve water. Those dikes, those boundaries of agricultural fields will preserve water from flowing out. Clear? So when the boundary is there, if there is some thing in the boundary, or to say, there is some hole in the boundary, right? That is not raised properly. From this entire water will go away from the rice field. One has to stop it by putting some mud there. Right? Similarly, through our outlets of senses, our consciousness is going. Getting right? Our conscious, inner consciousness is going through our eyes, is going through our ears. Right? Senses are like outlets with which our consciousness is flowing. So one has to block those senses. For example, one sees a beautiful object, right? Sense gratificatory object. So apparently it seems that I am taking that beautiful object within me. No, my inner consciousness is flowing towards that object. It's going away. It is supposed to focus within, within on Krishna who is within. But it is going out through my eyes. It is going out through my nose. Nose is pulling me, right, towards some fragrant objects. Hand is pulling me to touch some soft objects. So consciousness is flowing through the senses. A very important indication. Just like water flows, if the boundary is not blocked, water flows out of the agricultural field. Similarly, consciousness flows. One has to be very careful. That analogy is clear. Next.
The autumn moon relieved all creatures of the suffering caused by the sun's rays, just as wisdom relieves a person of the misery caused by his identifying with his material body, and as Lord Mukunda relieves Vrindavan's ladies of the distress caused by the separation from him.
So autumn moon relieved all creatures from the suffering caused by sun's rays. So this particular analogy we will discuss after the break, because it's already 12:10. So we'll take break now. So 42.
Sharad arkam shujam stapan bhutanam udupoharat dehabhimanajam bodho mukundo vrajayoshitam.
The autumn moon relieve all creatures of the suffering caused by the sun rays. Just as wisdom relieves a person of the misery caused by his identifying with his material body, and as Lord Mukunda relieves Vrindavana's ladies of the distress caused by their separation from him.
So, autumn moon relieved all creatures from suffering caused by sun's rays. So, as monsoon is going away and autumn is coming in, so the wetness in the atmosphere will reduce, right? And in Sharad season, it's little hotter. October you will see, you get little suffocation, you get sweat and all that. So because of sun's rays, there is some kind of heat that is created. So the moon in the night will relieve one from that kind of suffering. So that is compared to wisdom relieving a person of the misery caused by bodily identification. So where is our misery? Because of bodily identification. So how will one be relieved of that bodily identification? By wisdom, developing wisdom. So because the conditioned soul is entrapped in this material body, right, made of earth, water, fire, ether, and inside mind, intelligence, ego, there is definitely some kind of misery, lot of misery. So one can be relieved of that misery by developing proper knowledge. So in the third canto, Vidura asks Maitreya, how come there is a connection between the soul and the body? Soul is purely spiritual and this body is material. So where is this connection coming from? How can the pure spirit soul be entangled by this material body? So what is the key? Anyone can say? Where is the connection between soul and body? Soul is spiritual, right? And body is material. How come both of them are together? Anyone wants to attempt? Not the senior batch? Senior batch know all the answers. They are in 10th canto. Due to false ego, ichha, dvesha, desire and hate, hatred. And anyone else? Amit Prabhu? Okay, all of you have very right answers. That's what Maitreya Muni also says. Actually, there is no relation between body and the soul. The only relation that is existing is due to misidentification. Right? For example, someone's head is cut off. Can he see that? So, soul's identification with the body is seeing one's head being cut off. If your head is cut off, how can you see? You can't see, right? You go in front of a mirror, how will you see it? You don't have eyes only to see it, right? Even if you go in front of the mirror. So that is possible only in a dream. In a dream, one can see that one head is cut off. One's head is cut off, right? That is possible, right? So actually soul and body has no connection. But living entity feels that connection in illusion. Because of the misidentification, because of the false ego, which is like dream. So we are all in dream now. This is dream. What's happening here is a dream. So we are all in a dreamy situation, illusory situation of identifying oneself with the body. That's actually misidentification. There is actually no connection between the soul and the body. The connection is established only because of misidentification and maya. Lord's illusory energy. So, how to come out of that? By developing wisdom. That's what it says. Wisdom relieves a person of the misery. So, now I'll tell something practical. This all seems very fantastic. Right? So, Maitreya Muni says, Vidura says. Vidura, after he gave this knowledge, that actually there is no relationship between the body and the soul. It's all because of the living entities, false ego and misidentification. Then Maitreya says like that. Then Vidura replies,
I have developed this knowledge because of you. Thank you for revealing me this knowledge. But I will be able to assimilate this knowledge and realize this knowledge only when I serve you. Are we understanding? All of us have. All of you gave right answers. Then it's because of false ego, because of misidentification, because of ichcha desha, whatever. All of you have given that. But will you, because you said this answer, does it mean that you will no longer identify your body with the soul, I mean soul with the body? You still are in bodily conception. I am in bodily conception. You are in bodily conception. It will happen for a while. Although we have knowledge, we don't have realization. So Maitreya Muni gave this knowledge and Vidura thanked him for this knowledge. I got this knowledge, but I will realize it and assimilate it and act on the platform of being different from this material body only when I serve pure devotees. So service will make the knowledge sink into our systems. We will be able to realize and assimilate the knowledge by doing service. Theoretically, we understood that it is because of false ego. And how to come out of that false ego? By doing service, there is a lot of crushing of false ego that happens. So by doing service, by being in the association of devotees, once false ego is slowly dismantled, right? So people will attack us. People will attack our false ego. They crush our false ego. So that's how one purifies one's false ego, by service and service in the association. And by hearing in the association, one will sharpen one's intelligence. Hearing and studying. That is Srimad Bhagavatam. And by chanting in the association, one will purify one's mind. So purification of mind happens by chanting. Purification of intelligence happens by Shastra. Purification of false ego happens by association, service. Right? So that's how one will come out of this misidentification. So atom, the moon, in the atom season, relieved all creatures from suffering caused by sun's rays, and wisdom relieves one from false ego, misidentification, bodily identification. And another point, another analogy is given. Lord Mukunda relieves Vraja gopis of the distress of separation. So gopis are in distress, and Krishna comes back from the pasturing grounds to Vrindavan, all the Vrindavan gopis would see him and then they feel happy. Their separation is to some extent mitigated. Whole day Krishna is in the forest and now he has come back. So by seeing him, by bringing their eyes in contact with the darshan of Krishna, they feel happy. Next, 43rd verse. Can someone read the translation? Who has the mic? Yes, 43. Yeah.
Free of clouds and filled with clearly visible stars, the autumn sky shone brilliantly, just like the spiritual consciousness of one who has directly experienced the purport of the Vedic scriptures.
So, in the monsoon, you don't see the stars so much. Only glowworms are seen. But in autumn, slowly stars are visible. So that visibility and the clarity of the sky which reveal the stars and all, that is compared to the pure heart of a devotee. So devotee's heart is purified, that is compared to the clear autumn sky. Okay. So when there are so many clouds, then one will not be able to see. It is said that somewhere in the 11th canto, it is said that our mental speculation, they are like clouds. When sun is there, we will not be able to see the sun clearly because of clouds, right? Similarly, one will not be able to realize Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead if his mind is obstructed by clouds of mental speculation. If one speculates about Krishna's identity, what is the identity of Absolute Truth? Who is that Supreme, Absolute Truth? So if one speculates, that is compared to cloud, he will not be able to, see. So when clouds are there, sky is overcast with clouds, still you can figure out whether it is day or night without seeing the watch also. right? 12 p.m. or 12 a.m. You can, to some extent, figure out it is daytime or nighttime, right? How? Because when sun is there, still, although sun is not visible, the sun's effulgence will manifest through the clouds. That also we have seen in the morning. By that sunshine, which is partially manifested, although not visible, we will be able to make out that it is daytime. Is it not? But we can't see the sun. Sun's effulgence only we can see. Why? Because of clouds. Similarly, when our mind is filled with mental speculations, the maximum possible realization of the absolute truth is his Brahman feature. Understand? When the sky is overcast with clouds, the maximum possible realization of sun is through his sunshine only. You can't see the sun. You can't see the sun globe there. But you will figure out that, oh, sun is there. It's daytime. But you can't see the sun. Similarly, you can't see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You will only see his brightness. Because our mind is filled with mental speculation. That is the process of jnana. So, just like the clouds of this material mental speculations will block our vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the removal of those clouds will clear one's consciousness so that he can see Krishna. Similarly, the pure heart of a devotee is compared with the clear autumn sky where Krishna can manifest. Right? That clear autumn sky is compared to a devotee's consciousness. Devotee doesn't speculate. He hears from bona fide sources and understands. He has faith in the knowledge coming from the parampara, and thus through the medium of parampara he will understand Krishna. He doesn't unnecessarily speculate. So he is thoughtful. So not just thoughtful, he is faithful also. We should be faithful towards the parampara and independently thoughtful also. So thoughtful about the knowledge received faithfully from the parampara. If one is only thoughtful but he has no faith on parampara, his thoughts will take him to the Brahman. But if he is faithful to the parampara and then thoughtful also reflect on them, then he will realize the Lord. Right? That is like devotee process. Like that. Next, read the next translation.
The full moon shone in the sky surrounded by stars. Just as Sri Krishna, the Lord of the Yadu dynasty, shone brilliantly on the earth, surrounded by all the Vrishnis.
So full moon shone in the sky, surrounded by stars. So Krishna shone brilliantly on earth, surrounded by all Vrishnis. Simple comparison is made. It's clear. Next. Read the next translation.
Except for the gopis, whose hearts had been stolen by Krishna, the people could forget their suffering by embracing the wind coming from the flower-filled forest. This wind was neither hot nor cold.
So this part you have to remember. Asalishya samasitoshnam prasuna vanamarutam janastapam juhur gopyo na krishna hrita chetasaha. So the generic characteristics of autumn season are being described by Sukadeva Goswami here. There he says, everybody could realize, where is it? Because of the wind which is neither hot nor cold, people are relieved, right, of some misery, right, of suffering by embracing the wind which is not very cold, which is not very hot. That is clear. But this autumn atmosphere was not relieving the suffering of the gopis. Why? Next chapter. That is Venu Gita. They were overwhelmed because Sharad is coming. They are looking forward for Sharad Purnima. So they are looking forward for intimate relationships and reciprocations with Krishna. That is why they are. It's not about atmosphere. Now it's beyond the atmosphere also. So far the symptoms of climate of monsoon, climate of autumn is being described, and what effect it had on the people and what lessons can we learn. That's what he is saying. But this atmosphere was not very pleasing to the gopis, in the sense that they are looking forward for, you know, Krishna's association. That is the point. So gopis' hearts were stolen by Krishna. They were looking for association for Krishna. That is why they were not very satisfied. That was not relieving to them. Getting right? So that is little esoteric subject matter, why they are unable to be relieved by this wind. Okay, next.
By the influence of the autumn season, all the cows, doe, women and female birds became fertile and were followed by their respective mates in search of sexual enjoyment. Just as activities performed for the service of the Supreme Lord are automatically followed by all beneficial results.
Yeah, this is the season where animals become fertile and then further procreation happens. That is mentioned. Next.
O King Parikshit, when the autumn sun rose, all the lotus flowers blossom happily, except the night blooming kumut. Just as in the presence of a strong ruler, everyone becomes fearless except the thieves.
So as the autumn sun rose, all the lotuses blossomed happily, except the night blooming, there is one kumut, one flower. So sun rises, how can the night flower, you know, shine in the daytime? So when there is a strong ruler, everyone becomes fearless except the thieves. So that is the comparison made. So the night flowers are not blossoming in the day. All the day flowers were blossoming because of the sun. Similarly, all bona fide cultured citizens are happy when there is a strong ruler, but thieves are not happy like that. Next.
In all the towns and villages, people held great festivals, performing the Vedic fire sacrifice for honoring and testing the first grains of the new harvest, along with similar celebrations that followed local custom and tradition. Thus, the earth, rich with newly grown grain and especially beautified by the presence of Krishna and Balaram, shone beautifully as an expansion of Supreme Lord.
So this is also an expansion of Supreme Lord. So Bhagavatam also is filled with so many cultural aspects, tradition, culture, and some festivals are being explained here. So there are so many traditional festivals and sacrifices honoring various events in a year. So also there are so many festivals and other celebrations made in connection with the child's growth. There is Garbhadhan Samskara, then after child is born, there is some whatever birthday ceremony, then Uttana ceremony, then Namakaran ceremony. So like that, there are so many kind of ceremonies. So our culture is centered around celebrating so many important events. So when those so many events are celebrated, then there is a nice bonding between amongst people. There is a cause of celebration. There is always a cause for meeting with each other, right? Supporting each other. When some event happens in one person's house, then other people will go and assist that family, right? Like that, that's how a community living is developed. Now there is not much festivals, right? Not much celebrations. And even if there is some celebration, you just bring, hire some party, what is that called? Some team who can, caterers, correct. Caterers is the right word. Who said this? You said it. So they will come and cook and feed. So it's quite impersonal. In those, the traditional cultural festivals are quite personal, and the modern way of celebrating those events is quite impersonal. Right, birthday, child's birthday. You then book some hall, and all that company people will make all arrangements. You just have to, blow the, what is that called, birthday candle, eh? You just have to, extinguish. Extinguish. I don't know what is. You just blow off the flame of that birthday candle. That's the only thing you have to do. Everything is taken care by other people, and all the guests will come. Then they'll go. So there is no supporting there. So in traditional festivals, everything is done within the house with the help of other people. Yashodama celebrates so many events for Krishna, right? And all the elderly gopis around, they will come and assist Yashodamayi in whatever, Nandosa, Uttana ceremony and all this. So there is a lot of give and take. There is Dadati Pratigrahanati. Just now I was speaking to him. So why we have so many impressions, previous impressions in our minds? Because whenever we do these six loving exchanges, Dadati Pratigrahanati, Guhyam Akhyati Prichati, Bhungte Bhojayate Chaiva. When we do that with some people, there is a bonding developed. There is a love and affection that is developed. When whichever activity we do it very attentively, right, with full focus, that will only leave a long-lasting impression in our minds. And those impressions, whether they are positive or negative, they will haunt us. Right? Now, for the last millions of lifetimes, we have created millions of impressions, which are, some of them are positive, some of them are negative. Right? We have created so many by investing our time, investing our attention in all that, by getting involved in the six exchanges. That's why so many impressions are stored. So they keep popping up. Some positive, some negative. Some sweet dealing that we had with some friends in our college days may disturb us. Some whatever garam dealing we had with some people earlier, they may come and disturb us. So all these are there. Mind is a storehouse of all these impressions, and that will create disturbance in our sadhana. Right? So one has to replace all these impressions with some positive vibrations, spiritual vibrations. Whether it is positive or negative, if it is on a material platform, that will have some negative impression. But that is ultimately negative only. One has to replace all of them with a positive spiritual impression. Right? Now, coming back to this culture thing, all these beautiful celebrations, they leave pleasing positive impressions in our mind. What to speak of their effect when they are centered around Krishna? That is the point. In Vrindavan, all these celebrations are there. These traditional festival celebrations are there. But they are all centered around Krishna. So they will leave highest possible positive impressions. Right? In a spiritual community that is centered around pleasing Radha and Krishna, when all these celebrations are an impetus for us to develop such strong, deep spiritual impressions that will haunt us, even if we deviate sometimes here and there. Right? So these impressions will pull us back into bhakti. Right? If one happens to get deviated. So one has to fill. One has to fill all these celebrations with Krishna conscious elements, and one has to fill one's mind with all those positive spiritual impressions so that they will protect us one day in future. Like that. Next. Merchants.
The merchants, sages, kings and brahmachari students kept in by the rain were at last free to go out and attain their desired objects. Just as those who achieve perfection in this life can, when the proper time comes, leave the material body and attain their respective forms.
So in this Chaturmasya, so merchants who are accustomed to have some stalls on the bazaars, streets, right, they cannot do it. Right? Not everyone can have a room in a shopping mall where they can open their dukan and then start selling things. So in traditional way, many merchants, they come out on the streets and then sell curd, yogurt, this and that. They have that kind of marketplaces. Right now, if you go to some South Indian temples, so in front of temple there is a big bazaar that is all meant for marketplaces only. Some traditional items, some kumkum, this and that, they are sold. Some many hundreds of years back, people used to sell jewels, right, ratnas, right, diamonds like that. That is our wealth. So British came and then they took. That's what I heard. So then sages also, Chaturmasya, they stay at one place only. They don't travel so much. Right? Even Mahaprabhu also stayed at Srirangam for 4 months of monsoon, like that. And even kings also, they don't just go out. Because it is raining, like there is not much movement, not much travel, right, for all these parties. Right? and brahmachari students. So now you feel reluctant to have a class in emeritus. Why emeritus? We'll have an ashram only. Senior batch, I'm saying. Who will walk for 1 kilometer in rain there? We'll have an ashram, we'll have a temple hall. So after monsoon, you're happy to walk down. Right? But in monsoon, it's a little difficult to go. This is like maybe two, this one Vijayapeeth student only. I don't remember the name. Not necessarily. In some previous batches. Oh, bottle is yours? Possible. Height we have. Okay. Hey, Prabhu. Amit Prabhu, you take this. So, attend that call. So, Captain, attend. So they were all held back. They were kept in rain. They were at last free to go out and attain their desired objects, whatever. Whatever duties they have, they can go out and then do. Next. Read the next one. Chapter khatam ho gaya. Okay. Those who achieve perfection in this life leave material body and attain their respective forms at proper time. These are proper lessons. Jnani merges into spiritual effulgence of Supreme Lord. Yogi goes to higher planets. Devotee goes to Goloka and Vaikuntha. So like that, different destinations. Okay. So that's the end of this chapter, where Sukadeva Goswami very nicely described the monsoon in Vrindavan and autumn in Vrindavan, and so many lessons that we can learn from all these activities. Some lessons I kind of skipped, because it's a combination of both batches. We can't go deep into it the way we do in regular classes. Okay. Thank you very much. Now we will hear you. Before that, any discussion points, any questions, concerns, comments, suggestions? Any questions? Okay, no questions. Yes, Bhagavad Acharya Prabhu.
Serving Guru, will we realize whatever we learn from him? Can you give example, like, for suppose whatever he learned, how we can realize by serving a Guru?
How by service to Guru we realize? See, when we read books, we get theoretical knowledge, right? And for the theory to transform into some substantial realization, it needs some activity. Simple. You wanted an example, right? So in our college days, school days also, we have physics lab, chemistry lab, so many things are there, right? In the classroom, the teacher will say, you just take this thing and combine these two, and this is what will come. This is the output. For example, you are checking the gravity. What is that gravitational force? 9.8, what is that? What is 9.8? Gravitational? Acceleration. I forgot all that. G. G equal to 9.8, that's what I remember. I have did all these experiments, but I forgot all that. So, teacher says that in the class. You note down. You by heart it. And you write. You get 50 out of 50 in exams. Right, all this will happen, but once you go into the laboratory and then make an experiment and then get some readings, sometimes you get 9.9, sometimes you get 10.3. One day I think one of our friends got 11. Some people get 8 point or something. So you just kind of make some 6-7 observations and then get a average of it, where you understand where it went wrong. So then you finally come to certain conclusion, right? So, now immediately you will not realize also. Classmates, 9.8 is told. When you are doing experiment, immediately you will not get 9.8 also. You will make several attempts, you will fail, and then one day you will get the right observation. Getting right? So, now we have memorized, we are memorizing so many verses. Etadhyatura chittana matrasparshe chayamuhu bhavasindhu plavodrashto haricharyanavarnanu. Every day we recite this verse 3 times. Right? So it may not, now it's very pleasing sound vibration, definitely very purifying, and when you write in your exam, you get full marks. That doesn't mean you have understood it completely. That doesn't mean I have understood it completely. So when we are really, really, senses are pulling us, matra sparsha icha, ichaya muhu. When our desire to bring our senses in contact with sense objects is getting intense, deeper, 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 some sense is pulling us so much, we are unable to control it. Then one day, we sit in a Bhagavatam class and the speaker makes some point that strikes us, right? Then, oh my God, my mind is getting distracted so much. I am being pulled by this sense so much. I have to control. Then you come back to senses and then try to control that. And then and that hearing, right? When you are hearing from the right person at the right time, the right point, that will have a tremendous impact on your consciousness and you will immediately apply it, right? Oh, this point, this is what I wanted to hear in this. Then that will make more sense. Although you have memorized it, you have heard it a long time, many times, still you will make more sense out of it in that context, and then you will be able to realize that, oh, this is what I understood. So far we don't have soham ranam kshulla sukhaya dukham mahadgatanam viramayatasya for kshulla sukha mahadukham. So we are saying this. Then I don't think we have experienced a lot of mahadukham. Anyone coming from such poor backgrounds, where for 10 rupees at the end of the day you have to struggle a lot throughout the day, anyone coming from that background, maybe they will have some realization. Shulla sukha mahadukham, what it is. Right? So all this one will assimilate better when one does some activity, practicals. Classroom is theoretical, field is, site is practical.
Is it serving guru?
Yeah, serving guru. So guru gives you service, practical service, right? He will engage you in some activity. Now, on the weekend, you are asked to do something, right? Some document preparation, maybe some Janmashtami is coming. All of you will be asked to clean this entire temple hall. When you are actually cleaning it, right, then the cleaning of heart will happen. So now, mind will rebel. Why should I clean? Abhi ek ghanta cleaning ho gaya. How many hours is our service? So that kind of mind will rebel. Then you have to fight with the mind and then force the mind to engage in that activity. Your senses have the power. Your hand has the power to do it. But your mind is stopping the senses to do it. Mind is a controller, right? You will be given to the mind or you will give in to the instruction given by your spiritual authority, superior authority. So that makes a difference. So you are forcing your mind to do something which the mind doesn't want to do, right? So when Guru is engaging you in services, so we are engaging our senses in service. By engaging our senses in service, we are pulling our mind into control. We are trying to control our mind. Otherwise, mind is taking away our senses. So far, senses were taking away to different sense objects. Now, senses are engaging in services. Mind is getting controlled because of that. So from one side, you control the mind through sharpening your intelligence by studying Shastra. From another side, you control the mind by trying to engage the senses in service. From both sides, you have that advantage of controlling the mind, which is actually the cause of transmigration.
Thank you. Anything?
These are some thoughts. There could be elaborate answers also. Anything else? I think you can start giving your presentations. Then I will ask questions.